Live from the campus of Brooklyn College, it is Geek Speak with Ian Levenstein. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Levenstein.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak here at SpeakGeekSpeak.com. This is Showcase Spotlight number 3, and for those of you who are just tuning in, or those of you who haven't listened to any of the Showcase Spotlights before, main difference between the Showcase Spotlight and the regular episode is that with a Showcase Spotlight, I basically focus on one side of geekdom as opposed to every single one of them, which I like to do on most of the episodes. And on today's show, we are going to be focusing upon American animation, what got me my start in geekdom, basically. And I'm being joined by two people who I've grown to know over the couple of months that I've been doing the show, and also through the Comic Geek Speak forums with Sean. And I'll introduce Sean first, since he's a newcomer here. Sean Whalen from Ohio, otherwise known as Dr. Norge on the Comic Geek Speak forum. Sean, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much.
So how did you get into American animation?
Well, you know, very similar to what you were saying. I guess that was what got me into geekdom in general. I grew up, I guess the first cartoon I really remember latching on to was both Super Friends and then the reruns of the 66 Spider-Man cartoon. Those were just both cartoons, the theme songs. The second they kicked on, I was like glued to the television set. So it was really a lot of superhero cartoons that really, really got me into the whole animation thing.
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. And then when it was on, I don't care how many times I'd seen the episode, I was just glued to it.
I know the feeling, man. Tell me about it. And number two would be Robert Welkner, who joined us on Showcase Spotlight number 2 and is now back for more. And of course, from the vidcast CoinOp TV, which can be found at coinop.tv. Robert, how are you?
Good to hear you. You know, my call waiting is beeping as I speak.
That lovely, lovely call waiting beep. It's great, too, because with my new TV, even though we don't have call waiting, every single time somebody calls, a little button pops up right in the middle of the picture, so we know who's calling. So trust me, I know how annoying that can be. So same question to you, Robert, to get things started. How did you get started with American animation?
Oh, boy, let's see. Well, maybe Hanna-Barbera or Tom and Jerry stuff. I mean, obviously, probably in repeats because I'm not sort of so old. But definitely kind of, you know, anything with, like, animation that would sort of, like, far and away places or weird and interesting characters and that kind of thing really kind of hooked me in as a kid. I like to always lose my mind in cartoons and faraway places. And, I mean, especially Hanna-Barbera stuff with, you know, strange characters was really cool for me.
Yeah, well, Hanna-Barbera definitely, over the years, that's probably some of the best stuff. I mean, with Yogi Bear and with all the other lovely characters that they introduced into the mix. And it's sad to see that Hanna-Barbera sort of fallen to the wayside now that the company got sold and you barely ever see any Hanna-Barbera stuff these days.
Yeah,
especially with how good they were. Jeez.
Oh, tell me about it. And I myself, I mean, when I look at American animation, I'd say that probably the first stuff that got me into it is stuff that you can even borderline say is Japanese, but I'd say stuff like Thundercats and Transformers when they first came here. Originally, mostly, even though they were animated by the Japanese, they were technically American animation because they aired here first. So that's basically what got me into it. The G.I. Joe stuff back in the 80s, obviously, that I ate that up like a sponge with the Sergeant Slaughter and all that crazy stuff. And obviously, you know, the Super Friends, when I would watch those, even though they were corny, they got me into superheroes in some ways. And, you know, I mean, looking back on it now, the Wonder Twins and Gleep and all that stuff, I mean, it was incredibly corny, and yet it was exciting. And that's something that you need when you're a kid. You need something to latch onto, and I guess that's what I latched onto.
You know what, though? Did you know that they were corny at the time?
No. And that's important.
Either.
Yeah.
That's funny that, because I keep thinking now, I've actually been watching a number of the Super Friends because I got, you know, with the DVD sets that have come out, I've been watching them again.
Yeah.
And I'm amazed by how actually cheesy it was because I didn't remember any of that. I mean, I remembered, you know, Zan and Jaina, Wendy and Marvin and all that being corny, but I didn't remember the actual superheroes being corny, and they were really corny at the time.
Oh, God. Especially Batman and Robin.
Yes.
God. I mean, and the Batman and Robin animated series that was separate from the Super Friends was even worse. I mean, when I look back on it now with, like, all the Weeping Lizards Batman, Holy Houdini Batman.
And Batmite.
Oh, God.
I mean, that's a whole separate category. He makes Gleek look normal.
Sad but true, and yeah. It was even worse when he got introduced into the comics and just would randomly, like, pop up. He was basically their version of Mixie X Pillek or Mixoplick or whatever you want to call him.
Absolutely.
Oh, boy. And some of the other stuff that I was into, obviously, the Spider-Man and his amazing friends from the 80s with Firestar and Iceman, for some reason that I still don't understand to this day why they were actually teamed up with Spider-Man of all people.
Oh, yeah, and didn't they sneak, like, two X-Men-related episodes into that series at all, or am I imagining?
Yeah,
no,
they did.
You're 100%. Those were absolutely awesome, the X-Men episodes. I actually, one of the things I was thinking about for this was just when that episode aired, the first one with the X-Men, I was reading the Claremont X-Men at the time, and I was like, this is so cool. The X-Men are on television.
Yeah.
And it was really well done. For a cartoon at the time. I loved it.
And then Pride of the X-Men came out, which was that one-shot, basically, which they wanted to do as a pilot of an X-Men animated series for the 80s, with pretty much all of the voice actors of the G.I. Joe and an Australian Wolverine, which to this day, every single time I watch Pride of the X-Men, I need to turn away whenever he speaks because it's just so off-character. Whenever you hear him go like, oh, might, you know, when you expect What's Up, Bub, or something like that, you know, it's just, it's crazy. But that was actually incredibly well animated for the time, though.
Yeah, it looked pretty good. I think I got my videotape from, like, one of these, like, Burger King, like, Happy Meal things or something. Like, you know, I still have it. It's, like, sealed. I don't even think I ever watched it because I'd had it on tape or something, so.
Oh, my God.
Wasn't that great when cartoons, too, tied in with the restaurants and everything? It was like, cartoons were such an event, I remember, growing up. Like, tied into everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you go to Burger King, you get glasses or you get little figurines or something like that tied in with your cartoons. It was awesome.
You know, I'm actually glad you mentioned that because we recently got, like, new furniture and new TV and everything in my house, so we went through all the old VHS tapes that were lying around, and I found Little Lulu, the original Superman, and two Burger King Kids Club Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles VHSs that I had probably bought when I was 5 or 6 years old, and they were just sitting there, you know, collecting dust in a random drawer in the middle of nowhere, and looking at them, I had total flashbacks, you know, to the days when I used to actually, you know, care about the Burger King Kids Club or the Happy Meals and get those VHSs or those mugs or the little toys every time I went there, which were usually focused upon animation.
Which was, I mean, that stuff was just awesome growing up. It was, you wanted it. You had to have it. And obviously, that's how they got us into Burger King and McDonald's.
Oh,
but it
yeah.
worked out very well.
And you could basically go into an entire section of Super Size Me here if you want to talk about, you know, how they influence kids to eat fattening foods. But that's a different topic for another day.
Well, the tie-ins also just on that subject is, like the 80s cartoons you're talking about, like G.I. Joe and Transformers, and those were like almost 100% tie-ins to like toy selling and stuff. I don't know, you know, if that's something you want to touch on, but like, you know, they really kind of went overboard with the tying in thing, you know, with a lot of those.
Well, and didn't those, correct me if I'm wrong on this, I think those cartoons came from toy companies wanting to
yes.
promote merchandise
yeah.
versus the other way around, whereas, you know, it was the merchandise that sprouted out of the cartoon. I think it was the cartoon that was created to sell merchandise, which, I mean, they were great cartoons. I loved both of them. And, you know, G.I. Joe, especially when they had, I know they had a couple of week-long episodes where it was one continuing story
yeah.
throughout the whole week. I mean, they were just really well-written cartoons at the time. But boy, did they cook you into buying toys and things like that. It was a heck of an aggressive marketing campaign.
The entire first season of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles only existed to sell toys. And it's been well-documented as well. It's only about an 8-episode season or something along those lines. But when they went to Hasbro and asked them, we want to make toys out of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they're like, that's fine, but we need to see an animation first. And they would not sell the toys without the animation. So it's incredibly amazing how well-tied they were back in the 80s and 90s. You know, back then, it was toys, it was animation. There was no separate identity whatsoever. Today, it's very, very different.
Right? I remember as a kid, too, most of the cartoons I was watching as a kid, there weren't a lot of toys for. That really is something, like you said, when it started getting into the 80s, that really became a big trend in the 80s for there to be a lot of toy tie-ins and things like that with the cartoons.
Oh, yeah. I remember when going to Forbidden Planet and drooling over the Voltron figure for like $100 when that show was on. And I got like a bad clone now, but one of these days when the boat comes in, I'm going to go and buy some of those original, Voltron and Shogun Warrior stuff. And, Shogun Warriors, I think that was sort of an import, but, you know, that just since I mentioned that, that was like one I really remember liking as a kid.
I had two of those, too. I had Great Mazinga and I had Godzilla. Those are two big toy tie-ins. And they were it was really obscure stuff at the time. But you're right, I think those were definitely, those had to have been some form of import.
Yeah. Yeah, as much as I love America and stuff, I mean, like, a lot of our really, really cool stuff usually comes from, like, you know, somewhere else, you know, even if it's, like, Canada or something, you know.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, even that that new Fantastic Four animation that they're working on right now is coming out of France, so a lot of the animation that's being shown right now is being imported from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the changing, when you talk about the changing in the animation studios, one of the saddest things has been just the changes at Disney. I was never growing up a huge Disney fan. The things that I really gravitated to out of the Disney studio were things like Chip and Dale, because I thought they were hysterical.
Yeah.
And I liked Sport Goofy and the how-to ones, you know, which, I mean, obviously I didn't see those when they originally came out, but those were ones that would pop up on television, and I got gravitated to them. But as an adult now, looking back, and I do appreciate what they were doing when they originally put out those cartoons. The backgrounds, even in their movies and everything, by today's standards with the computer-generated graphics, they still stack up. They were doing 3D backgrounds back then by using multiple cells to show background detail and everything. It's the stuff is breathtaking. It's art. It's just incredibly beautiful. And to hear that Disney cut back so many of their studios, I love Pixar. I'm a huge fan of Pixar. I think their stuff is brilliant. But for that to be all we have available as far as big event-related animated movies, I miss the 2D things. You know, Lion King, Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, those all proved that you can do high-quality 2D animation and get people in the movie theaters.
I 100% agree with you with that. And in fact, actually, going back in time a little bit, focusing upon the cartoons from the 20s and 30s and 40s and all that, back in the day, cartoons seemed to be a lot more political than they are today. They had a lot more messages inside them, at least hidden, or sometimes not even close to hidden. I mean, right away I think of the Daffy Duck episode where, you know, he hits Hitler with a pie. I mean, stuff like that would never fly today. And it's interesting how you can sort of say American animation is sort of kiddified over the years to the point where, you know, all those political agendas really aren't inside the cartoons anymore.
Well, and you know what the sad part is? They won't even show a lot of those cartoons anymore.
Yeah.
Like those, the old Daffy Duck, the Donald Duck ones, the war cartoons and things like that. Unless you go and buy them in sets, you're never going to see them on a television set because they're so, you know, you're getting into that whole politically incorrect thing. Instead of being able to put them in the era that they were being put out, you know, and being able to use them as like a more of a historical thing, like it's okay to put them on television because they were in the past, you know, as opposed to today. It's sad because those were some of their funniest stuff too, because they were such satire over things that were really happening in the world at that time, and it was great.
It's true. It really is, and I mean, today you really don't have too many cartoons that focus on any sort of politics whatsoever. I mean, Rob, what do you think about that?
Well, yeah. I do remember sort of seeing all those early ones where it was kind of, you know, not politically correct. Nowadays, things that break the envelope and stuff, it's kind of tough. I mean, it's probably more like homebrew things that, like, you know, kids are making on their own and you know, uploading to YouTube or something is probably groundbreaking and interesting. But American animation is pretty safe right now, you know, and scared and you know, they only kind of force things, you know, a little here and there. You know, that's why the animators guys like to sneak little things, you know, hidden things, and, you know, that, like, in between frames, something like Roger Rabbit or something, like, you know, because it's not right in your face.
I think shows like The Simpsons, I think they're getting away with doing a lot more commentary on the world in little snippets on there. They seem to have a lot more freedom, I think, than most of, and a lot of those, the adult evening cartoons seem to be taking a little bit more chances with satire on what's going on now.
Yeah, some of that stuff. I was kind of randomly coming. I was thinking of like Disney movies and stuff. You know,
yeah, you're absolutely correct. Inside.
But yeah, Simpsons and you know some of those ones. Yeah, they're good stuff for kind of pushing things and definitely that skit that was on SNL, the ambiguously gay duo.
Oh, I absolutely love that. That was actually one of the reasons why I would sit down and watch SNL all the way through, is just to get to those Robert Smigel productions with like the ex-presidents and the ambiguously gay duo. Both of those were some of my favorite stuff.
Oh, and yeah. When they do the real-time audio ones where he would animate things to actual real audio clips,
yes.
Just brilliant stuff.
Tell me about it. And actually, a lot of people don't remember this, but Robert Smigel productions were actually the first couple episodes of Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law, were actually done by Robert Smigel Productions, and then they switched
really?
It over to Flash. Yeah, in fact, you could sort of notice, like, when you look at the pilot and the couple episodes after that,
mm-hmm.
it's the art style is completely different than what it looks like later on. So it's interesting how it basically, to cut costs, they switched over to a brand new company, and I think in the process they lost a little bit. Cost has a lot to do with it today. That's the main reason why the 2D companies shut down these days as opposed to 3D. It's easier to make.
Yeah, I think it's also part of the reason why it's hard for people to latch onto cartoons, because you're not wowed anymore.
Yeah.
I think there are ones that do. I shouldn't make a generalization like that. There are cartoons that wow me. I do see things like, you know, Bruce Timm and Paul Dini are doing, you know, with their hero cartoons. Like, you know, Justice League is probably, in my eyes, one of the best cartoons of all time that's superhero-related. And, you know, they are, you know, doing some cutting-edge stuff over there. But I do think overall a lot of cartoons are, I think they last a certain amount of time, but they're not timeless because, you know, the costs have been cut so much and we're losing quality.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. And also, just going back to the political side a little bit more, even back in the day, I mean, you mentioned the primetime stuff. I mean, the Flintstones and the Jetsons even, back when they were on at, you know, at 8 o'clock for the short time that they were, in prime time, they would get away with plenty of stuff also. And I think that's the major difference that people have to realize, that the prime time programming is going to get away with a lot more than something that you find at maybe 11 a.m. on a Saturday.
And the funny part, when I watched Flintstones as a kid, I didn't catch any of that.
Yeah.
I do now. You know,
oh, yeah.
When I see an episode of Adult, I'm like, how did I totally miss that? But you're right. Those things were in there. And it's funny that you can, you know, I think Pixar is good at doing that too, where they throw in like things that are geared towards adults that kids can watch without it ruining their experience. You know, it's not so bogged down in those political or, you know, even just an agenda to try and hit more of an adult audience that you can't enjoy it with a family. Flintstones you could enjoy with the family, and you don't have to worry about, like, losing the kids because you've thrown in something like that.
No, it's true. And I mean, there were even, like, some communist hints in the Flintstones that, you know, if you went back and looked at it, and there were some just some war references in there that only people would get if they, you know, actually experienced it, and yet it was still for the entire family. And another thing that I'll mention, I mean, obviously this is jumping ahead a long way, but Animaniacs. Animaniacs. So many times I would sit down and watch Animaniacs, and my mother or my father would be in the room with me while watching it, and they would get so many of the jokes that I wouldn't, and they'd enjoy it more than I did.
Why has Animaniacs and Tiny Toons not been put on DVD?
That's a very good question.
Oh, gosh.
Freakazoid as well. I'll lump that mm-hmm. in there because that's one of my favorite cartoons of all time. I have it, you know, sitting there on my computer, and I wouldn't have it on my computer if they actually released it on DVD.
No. Those are nice cartoons, but Dungeons and Dragons, the series. I mean, where is that?
Oh, man.
I think I saw every episode of that. I think that is on DVD now, or it's in the process of being put on DVD.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought I saw somewhere that it was.
Oh, my God.
You know,
God.
Part of the Saturday morning lineup that was. I hate to admit this. I remember at the time when it was out, I did like it.
You know,
when it was actually on the air. I'm sorry.
It's a little cheesy, but, you know, it's that show back in the day, I mean, especially when I was a D&D geek, and it was like, hey, this is, you know, I'm getting sucked into the TV version of the D&D world and stuff, so.
And they took a lot of liberties, too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as far as versus, because I had friends of mine that I played the game with, too, and there were definitely a lot of liberties taken with that cartoon versus, you know, the actual game. But I remember enjoying it. I got sucked in.
Well, you want to talk about guilty pleasures, the Super Mario Brothers Power Hour.
I can't believe you said that out loud.
Oh, my God.
I might be imagining this, but I just read somewhere like this week that was coming to DVD or
it
something.
It is, yes.
Yeah,
that's been confirmed. And, you know, we'll be able to watch Lou Ferrigno once again in that lovely Mario outfit doing the live-action skits.
Wow, with rubber bands sticking out of his chin and stuff.
Well, they had a lot of video game tie-ins. They had that. They had Zelda. You know, which I'm basically admitting that I saw all these things. Pac-Man.
Yeah.
These are obviously things that I watched. But they had that whole stretch there where they did a lot of video game-related tie-ins.
I'll probably have to get that DVD just to review because I'm, you know, the Mr. Retro guy these days, so.
I get into that, too.
What was the name of that one where the kid gets transported inside the video game world? For the life of me, I can't remember it. And there were, like, a bunch of different video game characters in it, and I seriously cannot remember for the life of me what that was actually called.
Oh, boy.
Was it like Zapped or something?
Something like that. Like Game... It wasn't called Game Pro, was it? Because I know that there was some sort of tie-in with Nintendo with that, but just, again, for the life of me, I can't remember what it was actually called.
I know exactly what you're talking about, too, and it's one of those things that, like, we'll hang up and this will be over and I'll remember it.
It'll be in the show notes like 2 days from now. Oh, yeah, that's what it was called. There you go.
My guilty pleasure, just since we're making confessions, is the Smurfs.
Oh, boy.
You know, I will admit I did watch that, too.
La, 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 la.
With Azrael and Gargamel and all the little Smurfs. And there was only one girl, I think. Smurfette,
well, yeah.
I think, was the only
later,
one was a girl.
Later years, they kind of had some more, another girl some. But, like, often when, you know, it's like long nights of drinking and we're trying to figure out, you know, who's the drunkest, we try and name as many Smurfs or something.
And going back to Saturday TV Funhouse, one of my favorite ones is when they do like a behind the scenes of the Smurfs, and you see what happened to them over the years, and how Smurfette has, like, you know, 12 kids and basically is like a crack whore now, and that would sort of happen when you're the only girl in an entire society. Oh my dear God, you know, I mean, you must get so many glances, it's not even funny. And the one that I loved was the Snorks, because it was such a ripoff of the Smurfs, and they didn't even pretend about it. It was just the Smurfs on the water. That's it.
Yeah, I remember that.
Now, was that running concurrently with the Smurfs?
It was.
Or was that afterwards? Because I remember that, but the Smurfs, I totally remember watching, but the Snorks, I don't remember seeing much of that. Was that after or concurrently with it?
You know, I remember, because actually I remember reading an issue of Dazzler number one, because that I randomly got for like $2 off the street, and they had an advertisement for, you know, NBC's animation block, and it was the Smurfs followed by the Snorks. So it was definitely on at the same time. I don't know when it came in after the Smurfs came out, but at one point they were definitely on at the same time.
I miss those animation block ads. When we had talked about, you said you were going to do this episode, I started just searching around, and there's a number of, you know, if you do a search, you can actually see a number of websites that have toy ads or with cartoons on them and all that. And it's great to see those, like, NBC Saturday morning ads or the CBS ones or ABC, you know, and just kind of see what the lineup was at those times, because there were some amazing cartoons. One of the ones that I pulled up on there were Thundar the Barbarian.
Oh, wow.
And that was one that I remember, Ariel and Ookla and his fire sword, and that was one that was a definite one that I really enjoyed at the time.
Did you guys find yourself, you know, like, watching a cartoon and that getting you into the genre itself? Like, if it was like a fantasy or you know, a sci-fi type of cartoon, would you see yourself then watching, you know, other fantasy shows and other science fiction shows? Like, was it like the basically, like, you know, you dip yourself into it and then before you know it, you're watching other things involved in that genre?
Well, it definitely, when they bookend shows similar, you know, you get kind of hooked. Like, if you're into, like, the fantasy show, and then suddenly the before and after, like, you know, if it's 8 a.m. and then, like, the 7:30 and the, you know, the 8:30 are sort of similar, you definitely, like, you know, wake up a little earlier or, you know, go to school a little later or something just to catch. I mean, that was smart to do. But that definitely, yeah, if the show is similar, you know, And then you can always, you know, fight about it, like which one is better or something, you know, like especially when all the robot shows kind of started coming around, the Voltrons and the GoBots and Transformers, and definitely all those I got hooked in, and it was all competition and which one was better.
I think you're right in what you're saying, too, with them bookending. I think basically Saturday mornings a lot of times decided what you were into. Because, I mean, definitely the lineups between the different stations were kind of keyed towards a specific genre at the time. So, you know, like for me, you know, I went through, you know, like I said, with like Thundar and Super Friends and Tarzan and, you know, different shows like that with heroic figures in them that I tended to be very into heroes. So, you know, those were things at the time. And then when there was like a Hanna-Barbera comedy lineup, you know, where I'd be watching like Blue Falcon and Dynamutt or, you know, Yogi Bear or Johnny Quest. Especially when Johnny Quest was on, you know, I was like very into adventure stories.
Oh, yeah.
At the time like that, because Johnny Quest was very cool. And
yeah,
they
really
had some
good.
Very cool adventure stories. And that, really that, I guess, got me more into the adventure genre, which, you know, maybe you consider it a side genre, but definitely their adventure stories were very, very cool. It got me interested in things like, you know, Indiana Jones and those type of movies and stories like that. So.
And young Indiana Jones and James Bond Jr.
Well, we can forget about certain things.
I never watched those.
Oh, I will admit I watched a couple episodes of James Bond Jr. I won't admit that was a guilty pleasure because it wasn't, but
I had to check it out.
Guilty.
Yeah, I had to check it out just to see how awful it was, and dear God, was it awful. Oh, and that opening, Bond, bam, James Bond Jr. You know, it's like, what were they trying to do? They basically ruined the character for a little bit there until Pierce Brosnan made it cool again.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. It was actually when when the Brosnan movie started hitting like GoldenEye, all that it did. And that's bad when an animation ruins a property so bad that you need a good movie to come out to fix it.
Oh my God!
Well, you know another classic example of that would be Happy Days, Mork and Mindy, the cartoons I'm talking about.
Oh,
Laverne
oh
and Shirley with the Fonz. They had to throw him on to try.
I didn't
and
even
make
know
it
these
cool.
existed.
Those were real. And I will have to say, I was so into Happy Days as a kid. That's a definite guilty pleasure. I liked the Happy Days cartoon because I was so into Happy Days at the time. But I know if I watched it right now, I would be probably beating my head against the wall, asking myself what I was thinking even watching it, because of the fact that I know it was so bad.
God, did you, Rob? Have you ever seen any of those Happy Days or anything like that animated series?
Oh no, I mean, you know, I must have caught a few minutes, but just hearing about them is like stabbing me with like a dull knife or something. It's torturous.
Wasn't the Happy Days one, and this will make it even worse for you? Wasn't the Happy Days one like there was some UFO involved or something? If
oh,
I remember
God.
Correctly.
Ugh.
all I know is by then it must have already jumped the shark.
Well, this is after jumping the shark multiple times, because literally. And by the way, best moment ever was on Arrested Development when Henry Winkler jumped over a shark.
Well, there's another great show that we just have to live on in DVD land and stuff.
Well, I'm hoping it goes to Showtime, but that's a completely different topic for another day. Now, I got to admit, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is what got me to start reading comics. And I'll say that because when I was into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, actually to the point where my parents tell me I didn't like pizza until I started watching Ninja Turtles. So that tells you how much of an influence that can have on a little kid's brain. But I used to go to the corner store and pick up a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Archie comic and start reading it. And that slowly got me into the genre of comics. And before I knew it, I was reading comic books every single day, basically. And I think that still exists today, you know, with the Justice League Unlimited comic getting people into, you know, DC, or even back in the day when Spider-Man animated series had a comic book that got people to start reading comic books. It definitely is a bridge jumper.
And now with video games, it's jumping back and forth, too, with comics and movies.
Yeah, I just saw an ad for, actually, it's funny that you say that, the Titans cartoon. They had, I guess the video game's either coming out, like, almost immediately, or it's already out. That they have one that's tied into the Teen Titans cartoon.
Yeah.
That's a classic example. Like Ninja Turtle, they had those arcade games back then where it was the games were great, actually, for a four-player arcade game. It was a fun video game
to
play at the time. And really, you know, that just kept me more and more interested in the animation at the time. And actually, I did end up picking up, I was already a comic reader when Ninja Turtles was out, but it did make me interested in reading the comic books because I had gotten so into the characters and the cartoon that it made me want to see, okay, what are they like in the comics? And it was, so you're right, that is one of those things that can draw you to other media.
Yeah, and one thing that I've noticed also is that, well, obviously, when you look at the schedule in today's world, those afternoon blocks are gone. Is it the fact that kids are not into animated series nearly as much as they used to, or are they just looking for other things when they come home? Are they just going to go straight to the video games and ignore the fact that the TV's there?
Oh, boy. Well, it all got ruined once, like, the Teletubbies got popular. I think that kind of killed, you know, the afternoon for kids or something. I think they all gave up. But, who wants to watch TV now? You got, like, so much other fun things to do. Like, you know, you can play your PSP and stuff. And, you know, it's tough. Things are always vying for, you know, attention that, you know, I think kids are a little more savvy with their, like, watching habits or something, but they're still, I mean, now I have, like, whole channels, you know, the anime channel stuff, so there's places for it, it's just different times.
Yeah, well, I don't know, just, like, part of me, like, broke in half when I realized that the WB was getting rid of their, you know, WB afternoons, which I had basically grown up with when I was a kid, and, you know, when other channels like Fox stopped showing Fox Kids, I was basically like, what is happening to our world, you know? And it's funny, too, because I think that I can basically, in my opinion, half the reason why kids have a smaller attention span today is because they can't sit down and watch a half-hour episode of a show anymore. They just pop on their PSP and play that, and then pop in another game and start playing that, and pop in another game and start playing that.
You gotta remember, too, like, channel surfing is a big deal now.
Yeah.
When we were kids, it's kind of hard to really compare. Because when we were kids, you had, like, five channels.
Yeah.
And that lineup, when they had to set up those lineups, they really had to gear it towards, okay, at this time of the day, our best audience is going to be kids. So we are going to gear that towards the kids. And it was really basically three of the channels were competing with each other, especially on Saturday mornings, for that kid time slot. Where nowadays, with cable, you know, you've got Cartoon Network, you've got Boomerang, you've got Disney running old cartoons. It's kind of all over the place. And I do agree with you. I think that is part of the attention span issue. Because, in fact, not only do you have the outside things like video games and all that, but even on television, you can watch a program for like 10 seconds and you're clicking to another channel. So, you know, you don't sit there for a set block. I agree with what you're saying there. Because it's really different with the amount of choice, which choice is a good thing. I love having, you know, all the different channel choices, but I think that's why you don't see the lineups. Disney tried doing the one Saturday morning a few years ago, which was successful, I think, for them for a while. But even that kind of fizzled out because, you know, they had things like Recess, which was really, really great. They had The Weekenders, which is also a really, really funny one, and just a few other cartoons. My wife and I actually watched them because it was great to have a Saturday morning lineup of some sort. And they were actually very, very funny cartoons. So, and Recess today sticks up because of the fact that we've all been at a school, and it takes place mainly on a playground, and, you know, it's something that people can really relate to. But I think they did make an attempt to try and revive a Saturday morning lineup, and I think it just fizzled because of the fact of competition. And cost versus the fact that you've, you know, just got so much competition out there.
And wrestling is so popular, it's like, put that on instead.
Oh, boy.
Instead of cartoons.
Yeah. Sad but true. I mean, and even as the, you know, the popularity of wrestling has fallen over the years, a lot of the times, you know, you'll turn on USA Network and, you know, you'll see wrestling, and then you'll turn on TNN and you'll see wrestling, and then mm-hmm. you'll turn to another station and they've got some sort of Japanese wrestling on or something like that. You know, you can't escape it, even to the point where, you know, Mucha Lucha. I mean,
oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. I haven't actually watched it myself, so I wouldn't be able to comment on Mucha Lucha. But again, I guess that's sort of, you know, trying to, you know, grow on the popularity of wrestling, even getting cartoons that are based on it.
Yeah, but that at least that one's kind of clever.
You know, I've seen a couple episodes of that, and I really did enjoy it. It's a very, because, you know, it's more like a parody than anything else. So it's it really is. It's a funny cartoon, so it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah. I might be remembering this wrong, but didn't the WWF have an incredibly short-lived animated series back in the 80s?
Yes, it did. I admit to being a fan of that cartoon. It was Hulk Hogan and, like, Andre the Giant.
Yes.
And I couldn't even tell you the plot of one of the episodes. I'm not sure there was one. That's why I'm saying I can't tell you the plot. I just remember that everything seemed to be leading towards there were bad guy wrestlers and there were the good guy wrestlers, and they would go on little adventures, and ultimately they led to them facing the bad guy wrestlers. And that was basically the gist of it. So I can't remember much else other than that. But, yeah, I remember that was definitely one of them.
Oh, God.
Hulk Hogan's rock and roll, rock and wrestling or something like that. It was something.
Did the wrestlers do their own voices?
I hope so. Well, I mean, Sergeant Slaughter did his voice in G.I. Joe, so mm-hmm. I wouldn't see a reason why he wouldn't do his voice in an animated series. I don't know. Oh, man. And you know what, Rob? I mean, since we did mention the video games before, I guess I'll ask you the same question I asked Sean. You know, do you think it's the attention span of, you know, being able to go from video game to video game to video game is the reason why we don't see a lot of cartoons on TV today?
Well, yeah, I think the fact that there's so many options, you know, I mean, like channel surfing is, you know, a thing and distractions and, yeah, games, definitely games. I mean, especially, you know, now the whole portable thing is so big. I mean, my niece and nephew came over to visit and like he had a PSP out the whole time. We were hanging out, like watching TV while playing games and stuff. And I do the same thing too. I'll have like three things going at once and channel surfing and. It's really hard to devote. We're just like this multimedia, you know, with IMing and like emailing and surfing and stuff. It's like we're this like multimedia world now that just doing like one thing, you know. I mean, I'm watching TV as we talk. I can't just talk on the phone with you guys. I'm flipping around to see what stupid shows are on TV.
Oh, man. And don't make me get into the fact that I don't have the internet in this room anymore again because I'll start ranting all over again. Because trust me, I'd be doing the exact same thing right now. I'd have my Firefox open. I'd be on three websites right now getting information as we're talking. So trust me, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And remember, kids, especially when you mentioned things like PSPs and Game Boys and all that, you know, a lot of those have animated cartoons on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
You can get the, like I know Nintendo's experimented with putting like SpongeBob and things like that onto you know, Game Boy Advance cartridges, and you know, with the PSP, they can actually get video onto the PSP. So kids today have a lot more control than we did over what they watch and when. You know, whereas we had to revolve our day around what we wanted to watch. You know, like after school, you came home and you sat down and you watched your favorite shows right after school because there was no other time to watch it.
Yeah.
There was no videotaping. There was no, I mean, you know, until, I mean, then when VCRs came out, there were. But, I mean, you know, it was still, you know, there wasn't so much freedom of, you know, the show's going to air two or three times. Or, you know, it was, you know, basically one shot done. You had to be there to be a part of it. And I think nowadays, you know, kids can pick up, you know, their shows, you know, basically they air two and three times on television. So they have lots of different options on when to watch.
And
they have them portable.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually really glad you mentioned that because when you talk about taping, a couple of times also, again, I was just, you know, recently cleaning out the closets basically, and I found an old videotape that probably hadn't been touched since like 1988 with episodes of the Bionic Six and episodes of not the Ghostbusters, but the real Ghostbusters. The one with like all the other like the odd characters that had absolutely nothing to do with the Ghostbusters themselves, and it was, you know, totally different than, you know, the movie franchise and a couple other things on there. And I remember, you know, making sure that if I was not home on Saturday morning that I was taping these because I knew I wouldn't be able to see them for like a year and a half, 2 years. And I'm only like, you know, like 8 or 9 at the time, and this is still going through my head. I need to tape these so I'll be able to watch them. That's not the case anymore.
And now you're just like bit torn to show if you miss it.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I mean, just last night, you know, I'm sitting there and talk about the attention span. I'm sitting there having a conversation on Instant Messenger while I have my Firefox open while watching the IT Crowd. So yeah, I've got like, you know, four things going at once. So I definitely know, you know, about, you know, having to do multiple things at once because that's the world we live in. So there's never one thing.
Two earplugs going once, where you're like listening to music and then like talking on the phone, like with the ear set, like at the same time. You know, that's really, you know, when I feel like I've gone extreme. You know, like two phones at your ear, like one like a cell phone on one side and like a real phone on the other.
I've seen that happen to some of my friends, and like as it's happening, I'm banging my head against the wall. Like, what the hell are you doing? Oh, man. Although, actually, you know what? The other day I was on a VoIP call with Toby, and I had iTunes going while hearing him in my headphones. So I'm hearing both at the same time. So I'm literally carrying on a conversation while listening to a song. So I think that's bad enough.
Oh, do you think cartoons... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, last night when I was doing my thing, I was watching Aeon Flux while I was editing, just to get back to animation. I don't know if we've touched on that at all, but that was really groundbreaking, awesome show, and anybody who hasn't seen like Aeon Flux, needs to go rent the DVD set that came out.
Yes, but not the movie. Don't watch the movie. Don't watch the movie.
I missed the movie, and I'm so glad you said that, because do I need to see this?
No,
because I really did like the cartoon. You're right. That was pretty groundbreaking, because it was a very unique at the time art style.
Yeah,
which was one of the things I really liked about it, because it was really kind of gripping, because it was kind of like a hybrid of anime, like a computer style of animation, kind of mixed together, and it really had its own unique look to it, which was really kind of cool at the time. And
yeah.
I think a lot of cartoons have tried to borrow from it since, but it was really, especially in being on an MTV, style, for a show, it was really kind of, it was edgy. It was very edgy.
Yeah, and a lot of people forget, the whole reason why things like Adult Swim can exist today is because of stuff like Cartoon Sushi back in the day, where you'd be able to, sit down and watch all these, incredibly, incredibly crazy, crazy, crazy animations that would never fly anywhere else. And, I mean, back in the day, MTV was where you went for those, creative, innovative animations. And, MTV is almost non-existent with animation these days.
Yeah, I mean, they had Beavis and Butthead came out of there. Was Ren and Stimpy then, or was that strictly Nickelodeon?
It was both, actually, because there were a couple times when I was able to, flip the channel, and I'd see Ren and Stimpy on MTV. Even, there were even some episodes of Rocko's Modern Life that aired on MTV back in the day. So,
really?
Yeah, because they were all related. MTV owned by Viacom, and, Nickelodeon was all part of the package. So every now and then, when MTV had nothing else to show, they'd show a random Nickelodeon cartoon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Beavis and Butthead, I remember I was glued to.
Oh, yeah.
That was just it was so hysterical, and the way they tied that into videos at the time, and to see the videos, I thought were the best part of the show, because to have them commenting on the videos, they'd flash back to just the looks on their faces and just little comments they did. I mean, it was a great way to use animation to keep their videos interesting.
What came first, Beavis and Butthead or Mystery Science Theater?
You know what? I think Beavis and Butthead, although I could be wrong about that.
Yeah.
It was definitely Beavis and Butthead. Mystery Science Theater was its own separate. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Ball, that was great. But I wonder, I'm sure shows like Beavis and Butthead led to Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, back then, everything was getting nice and creative, and that's what I loved about the 90s. You saw these new ideas coming out of animation studios and coming out of people's heads that you had never really seen on TV before. Even the spinoff of Beavis and Butthead, Daria, was so creative for its time. And the fact that it basically took a barely anything character from Beavis and Butthead, made a completely different animation style out of it, and made it into its own show to the point where you barely even remember Daria was on Beavis and Butthead in the first place. I, myself, love Daria so much more than I love Beavis and Butthead, because it was an intellectual show, which is something you really didn't find too much.
The best thing, it's funny that those 90s animators are still pumping out animation today.
Yeah.
And honestly, they're the ones that are keeping... I think they're keeping animation alive because they're producing the best stuff.
Definitely, without a doubt. And when you mention MTV, we got to mention Nickelodeon and the old cartoons that they used to show back in the 80s and 90s. When you look at Nickelodeon today, they have a very different stance on animation from the looks of things. Not too many new shows coming out. They rerun a couple of the old ones. You'll see most of the old shows on Nicktoons, the separate station from Nickelodeon now, and not too many of its old stuff. Do you think Nickelodeon's fallen to the wayside when it comes to animation?
Boy,
well, they have their target, because it is Nickelodeon. They usually cater to kids and stuff. So
yeah.
They do like Rugrats and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, which is in like its 400th season now. Seriously, it's like every time you turn on the TV, there's a new episode of Rugrats. Now they have the one where they're all grown up, which actually, by the way, I've caught a couple episodes of that. It's actually not too bad. I was very surprised by it. I thought it was going to be a gimmick, mm-hmm. and you know, them being all grown up, it actually works pretty well. They make it very creative and very different than the actual Rugrats show itself. But you don't really find too many of those old shows. Like, I hate how Nickelodeon and Disney has the same thing. After about three or four seasons, they just abandon a show entirely and just mm-hmm. put it in reruns. I hate that about them.
But you know, that seems to be the trend in animation in general. I mean, look at things like Justice League that are coming to an end.
Yeah.
Teen Titans just came to an end. It's really basically they keep it as long as they can until they can syndicate it to death.
Yeah.
Because I think it's... I think this is kind of answering your question at the same time. I think what studios are shooting for now is, let's get these shows syndicated so we can show them over and over again on these channels that do that. Because there's so much out there that, you know, you can pull in the old cartoons and then the more recent cartoons, and you can make your money that way without actually having to come up with something new and, you know, be trend-setting. I think there are trend-setting people out there who are doing some great animation. I think we've touched on a number of them. But I think they're also competing with the fact that these companies are trying to throw these cartoons into syndication and just run them over and over again to just make money without having to do anything new.
I agree with that, because I remember just how often I would see, you know, this exact same episode of one particular show on Disney or on Nickelodeon over and over and over again. There was one time where I think three times in the same week they aired the same episode of Lilo and Stitch on Disney, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, don't you think the kids are going to notice that they're watching the exact same show? I mean, they're not that stupid, but again, this is Disney here, so... They've made some silly decisions over the past couple of years.
And why, when a show's in syndication, why is it that we only see, like, a small body of the episode?
Yeah.
You know, why can't they just be sold to that station as a full, complete set and keep it interesting? You know, there's a number of shows that ran four and five seasons that, quite frankly, you know what, you could keep going through the run, and I would probably stay glued to you.
Yeah.
If you ran it again, because I would see a whole thing. But when I see the same episode, like you were just mentioning, three and four times, you've lost me. I don't, you know,
yeah.
I'm going to stop TiVoing you. I don't want to watch it anymore, because it's a waste of my time, because it's the same thing over and over again.
That's the one thing Disney's doing right with those old Fox Kids cartoons that they've been showing with the Spider-Man, with the X-Men. They've actually been showing the full runs, and that's something that I really, really like to see. There haven't been too many, you know, like repeat episodes where they, you know, they've gone out of the order of the original run, and I really wish that they would do that with some of their other shows.
Yeah, actually, I'm watching Spider-Man right now, that particular series that you're mentioning. Or I've been watching it, you know, as it's been going on. I never saw that one. I saw Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Now, did that one come after Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends,
yeah.
the actual
yeah.
solo series?
Yeah, the Spider-Man series came out in the 90s, and that was actually the first one that that Fox did after X-Men. So X-Men was popular, and then Spider-Man came, and actually Spider-Man actually, in some aspects, was more popular than the X-Men animated series at the time.
Yeah, and the Spider-Man, what's great, you can tell it's from the same studio, because it looks like it belongs with Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. You know,
yeah.
the animation style is very similar. And it's great, though, because you're right, they are rerunning them. And I don't know if they're running them in order or not, but it sure feels like, you know, like if you see part one on one day, you're guaranteed you're going to see part two, like, right afterwards.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they're taking the initiative to at least rerun that properly, because it does make for, you know, it easy to get glued, especially with the popularity of Spider-Man movies. And if you're going to get kids into this show... This is a great time to get them to latch on to something from the past that maybe they haven't seen.
Yeah, that's true. And also, right away, I got to ask, since we've talked about pretty much every Spider-Man show, which one's your favorite out of all the animated series that Spider-Man's been in over the years? The early 60s one, the Spider-Man and the Amazing Friends, the 90s Spider-Man, and the MTV Spider-Man. Out of those, which would you think is your favorite?
Well, that is so, so tough, because I guess I can put each of them into a period. I don't know. You know what, Robert, why don't you go ahead? I don't know if you can feel this one. Let me think about it for a second. That's tough.
Well, I probably watched the most of the first two, the Spider-Man in Color and then the Amazing Friends. I'd probably say the Amazing Friends one, just because it sounds amazing. And, you know, I kind of did have a baby crush on Firestar, even though she was worthless. But, you know, anytime you have a gal flying around who can go on fire, it's, you know.
Yeah. I did like how they made her a full character, basically, in the Marvel Universe. After, you know, she was in there, she joined the New Warriors and, you know, got a relationship going with Justice. And
yeah, well, that's what happened with Nyx. Didn't Nyx, I mean, just to jump ahead into, like, modern times with the Nyx, the Wolverine clone girl or whatever it
yeah.
is, starting like the cartoon, and then they kind of transported her to the comics.
X-23,
that's right. I'm saying the wrong thing there,
well,
X-23.
Nyx was the series she was in, so that's why you might get confused over
yeah.
that. You know, I remember watching, too, when the Spider-Man and Amazing Friends was on, when they finally brought Firestar into the comic books, that limited series, I remember seeking it out specifically because I like Spider-Man as Amazing Friends so much.
Yeah.
So it was a great... It was great that Marvel decided to jump on that idea, and because I do think it probably brought people into the comic shop that maybe wouldn't have gone in before, or maybe got them reading Marvel books if they hadn't been reading Marvel books before, just because of that character maybe they latched onto from the cartoon.
Yeah,
it was. I have to agree with the Amazing Friends one, just because there were guest appearances by various heroes, and that was the first time I'd seen a number of the heroes animated.
Yeah.
And that was, the X-Men one for me was a highlight, just because I was so into the X-Men at the time. And that was only, I had one book. And it was, so great to see them animated and animated so well. Like you said, the voices we could have probably done some work on, but they really looked good. And it was great to see different characters be guests on that show. So
they have the Danger Room too. Wasn't that in the I mean, that was just having the Danger Room animated in some capacity, was instant drool factor.
X-Men only one title? This is foreign to Ian. What is this you speak of? If only that was the case today. instead of like the 15 X titles that are out there now.
Right.
It was so much simpler back then. God. And you know what? For me, I'm going to have to go with the 90s Spider-Man, only because I guess it might be because I grew up in a different, a bit of a different generation of animated series, because, I'm still sort of youngish out there, I guess. And I have seen the Amazing Friends, but to me, nothing emulated the comic book better than the animated series from the 90s, mostly because what was going on in the comic book there felt very similar to what was happening in the animated series. They even introduced that better than the comic did it. In the last couple episodes of the series, they introduced Ben Reilly, they introduced Spider Carnage, and they made them seem not cheesy.
You know what the funny part was? When I saw those episodes finally, because I did, like I said, I saw them after the fact. I don't know why I missed that series when it was out.
Yeah.
But all I was thinking about, there's been a number of websites talking about how to fix the Clone Saga and all that. Basically, just count the animated episodes as canon and
Thank
just
you.
Leave it at that.
Yeah, exactly.
They were that good. They
yeah.
really, really were. They handled that whole saga really, really well. They took the best parts from it, because there were good parts in it, but they left out all the garbage.
And by the way, anybody who needs to know about this Clone Saga, go search for The Life of Reilly. That's what it's called, right? The Life of Reilly is probably the best collection of stories about the Clone Saga and how it deteriorated into what it ended up being. How they kept making it longer and longer and longer until it was no longer a coherent story. But you can see a lot of the ideas that went into that, and I'll link to that in the show notes if I can actually find it. It was probably it's probably one of the best written things out there on the internet that has to do with comics, in my opinion. But also, did you guys see the MTV Spider-Man? Did any of you see it?
Yes.
Okay.
Not me.
And what did you think about it? Because I thought it was incredibly well done.
Did you say you saw it, Robert? I didn't.
No, I didn't.
Okay. That one, I guess when we were talking about Anne Flux before, it was the same thing. I thought it was very stylistic. I liked the fact that they tried to do their own thing with Spider-Man versus kind of like bring back any of the previous Spider-Man series. I thought it was very well written. I thought it was great. I really enjoyed each episode. I actually was sad to see that there weren't going to be more, because I thought it was very well done. I really, really enjoyed it. And like I said, I thought it was very stylistic at the time.
Yeah, and also Neil Patrick Harris did a very, very good job of voicing Peter Parker / Spider-Man. I thought he basically took the style that, Tobey Maguire had set out there and emulated it very well.
Yeah, it really did. It felt like it was part of the movie universe.
Yeah, definitely. Except for the fact that Harry looked entirely different. But again, we won't even get into that. like the blonde hair and, oh God, what were they thinking?
Yeah, especially, that was one that baffled me. That was the only thing I will say. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was something that just completely slipped my mind right now. But that was, when I was watching it, I'm like, it was obviously so blatantly done because the movies were so popular.
Yeah.
That they were trying to, grab an audience with that, especially in between movies. And why they wouldn't have stuck like directly with what the movie had, because you really had automatically your kid audience and your adult audience locked in because we were all fans of the movie.
Exactly. Oh, and obviously this is sidetracking again, but you've all seen the picture of the Spider-Man 3 promo poster, right?
That's why I'm being very quiet, because like all the Spider-Man talk is, I just want to skin and talk about spoilers for the Spider-Man 3 movie. I'm just like, I better be quiet before I mention anything.
Well, I don't think it's a spoiler at this point, considering that pretty much everybody has seen the picture out there who will see it, but I just got to mention it. And again, if you don't want to hear the spoiler, just fast forward about maybe 4 minutes and we'll stop talking about it. But what do you think about the black costume?
Well, it looks like he fell in oil or something. Like, you know, it's like
it looks like it's dirty, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the black costume is awesome in the comics and with Mark McFarlane drawing it and stuff. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, there's so much going on with Spider-Man 3 with that and, like, you know, the girl's name that begins with G and stuff and all these other question marks and having the other guy play, you know, the other character that starts with a V. I mean, it's like...
They're fast-forwarding 4 minutes. You can talk about them.
I just really... The thing that really... When finding out that Topher Grace is going to be Venom or something, like, I'm just like, wow, you know, like, that guy, you know? So, but yeah, the costume, I don't know, you know? I mean, we'll all go see it and it's going to make a bazillion dollars and stuff, but... You know, I never really liked any of the Spider-Man films anyway, like one or two. So,
really?
I expect disappointment. Like, I'm really fired up about Superman and X-Men 3 more than Spider-Man 3, so.
Which is the complete opposite for me, because I'm really afraid of what Brett Ratner is going to do to the X-Men series, and they're rushing way too much to get X-3 out there, so.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it'll have its horrible moments, but, you know, he can direct a little, you know, given a good DP or something, but that movie was already sort of made before he came on board anyway, so.
True, yeah.
And I think I'm less concerned with the director on that one than the timing issue. You kept mentioning that it's being rushed, and I'm totally like, where did this come from? You know, like, when I keep seeing pictures, I'm like, how are they getting these out here right now? Because, I mean, when you think about, like, you know, you talk about a Spider-Man 3 and how much development time goes into something like that, I actually do, and I can totally understand if you didn't like the first two. You're probably not going to like three because it's going to be, you know, it's the same team that's involved in producing that one. I loved the first two, and I mean, like I said, it's just personal preference. So I guess I'm giving them a little bit more leeway with, like, when I saw the black costume, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, is that a mess? But I also thought the same thing about the Green Goblin costume, and I loved the first movie.
Yeah, and also I love that Photoshop that one guy did of the Venom outfit to make it actually look like a Venom outfit.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, why can't the studio just see that and say, you know what, on second thought, maybe it can work?
it baffles me that they just take liberties that aren't necessary.
Yeah. Oh, well, what are you going to do? We now return to your regularly scheduled programming, already in progress.
Like a little sound effect there, you know?
Oh, yeah. You got to love it. And by the way, everybody who's listening right now should realize this is Geek Speak. Everything will eventually turn into comics. I've realized that no matter what the hell I do, it always ends up becoming comics at one point or another. So there you go. Because it's my main geekdom. So there you go. Anyway, going back to the cartoons, I mean, we mentioned Nickelodeon, and I have a favorite Nickelodeon cartoon. And it's Ah Real Monsters. And I think that the main thing about Ah Real Monsters that I love so much about it is that it added, like, you know, like, it added in jokes that you would only really get if you were watching the show, and it had historical content jokes that if you were, you know, one of the smarter kids, I guess you'd get them, while people who didn't know what they were talking about didn't know what was going on, but it was still funny. And again, that's something you don't really find from Nickelodeon today. It's usually either slapstick or nothing. None of those, like, hard to understand jokes.
You know, that's funny that you say that, because Looney Tunes did the same thing. A lot of the Bugs Bunny cartoons and things like that are what made them so great is that you can watch them now after reading literature and seeing other movies and things like that and seeing how well they did that too. And it's great to see cartoons becoming a little bit smarter like that, because then they're worth watching over and over again. And they're worth seeing no matter what age you are, because there's a little something for everybody.
Yeah, definitely. What do you think about that, Rob?
Yeah, well, I'm not familiar with that show, but definitely something to be classic and survive needs to have layers and touch upon, you know, like, two different audiences. I mean, like, you know, Shrek, I think, is a good example. If, like kids and adults, I mean, Shrek 2 is almost like an adult film made for kids or something. But, yeah, you got to have those layers because now we're going to buy them all back on DVD and keep watching them. And if we don't dig them 10 years later, they, you know, the sales won't be as high or something. Things have to have a performance factor to them.
And then on HD DVD, and then on Blu-ray DVD, and then on the little chip that you put into your head, which lets you watch movies.
Do you guys have any of the Simpsons DVD sets?
I do, yeah.
He actually made a comment in one of them, and I forget which one it is, that he said, by the time I release all the seasons on DVD, everyone will be ready to buy the new format. Because, you know, there's been so many, there's about 16 or plus seasons of that show. And he made a little crack about that. And it was really funny because all I kept thinking to myself, I'm like, the bastard knows that I'm going to wind up buying the next whatever it is, because it's true. He's got me hooked. I'll wind up going and saying, oh, wow, Simpsons on HD DVD. I've got to have these because there's going to be some Super Mondo extras that they didn't release in the first batch because they knew the next one was going to come anyway.
Well, I love the fact that I was actually disappointed when I realized that The Simpsons wasn't in HD, you know, that they just had it letterboxed on the side when I got my new plasma. And I'm thinking to myself afterwards, wait a minute, it's The Simpsons. Why the hell do you need The Simpsons in HD, you know? It's going to look as good no matter what format you're watching it in because it's the goddamn Simpsons.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
But it'll be that you can have, like, the whole season on a disc or, you know, that's what it's going to be, and people are going to rush to it.
Yeah, I guess. And speaking of which, I mean, with the DVDs, like, how much extra life has the DVDs brought into these old cartoons that we grew up loving?
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, even I was watching the Ian Flux thing, and on the special edition stuff, there's, like, leftover Liquid Television cartoons, even though I don't really like some of those other ones that they did, but, you know, those would be nowhere if it wasn't for being slapped on, like, that disc there, and it's, like, little bonus material.
It definitely
helps.
And it's funny that you say that, because, you know, part of the thing I like the most about what they're doing now with the DVD formats, and it's almost inexcusable when they don't, because there's times where they don't, it's that they release complete seasons, and everything's complete, and you get bonuses that are extras, but it doesn't take the place of having the whole program. And it baffles me when a studio releases these compilations of shows that are like three or four episodes that are totally random from all over the spectrum, and they aren't like the complete series, because to me, that's the key for me to buy a DVD set, is that I'm going to get the complete thing. And it goes back to what you're saying, how everything leads back to comics. It's the collector's mentality in me. I want everything if I'm going to go buy it.
Well, so, they screwed up with He-Man. They did, like, the greatest 10 episodes or something. And then, but the fans know what's up now because we got the little internet. We can go on and find out, like, don't waste your time with this version because in 3 months there's going to be the full Monty coming out. So if you're savvy, tech-savvy, usually kind of you won't get fooled. But, you know, for, like, the mom who's in Target and does, like, the impulse buy for their kid, those are the ones that, you know, and they're okay for, like, sampler packs and stuff, but, you know, real fans usually kind of know what's up, so.
Yeah, I mean, the internet out there is going to let you know pretty much every bit of information about every single thing coming out ever. So, you know, all you got to do is just go to, like you know, whatsondvd.com or whatever what URL it really is and just, you know, find out exactly what's going to be on the DVD and what you're going to have to put down money-wise. So, and that's also one thing that I hated at first about DC's releases of the DVDs. They were just putting together these compilations of greatests, and Marvel still does that. I mean, there's no, you know, like season 1, season 2, season 3 of Spider-Man the Animated Series. All it is are these, you know, like Green Goblin compilations and stuff like that. I'd love to just buy the one season of Spider-Man, but I can't.
But you know what? There's some guy sitting in an office that knows that people are going to buy these, like, mixed compilations, and that when they release them in season order, they're going to go back and rebuy them all again to get everything. There's got to be some form of, because those compilations are cheaper.
Yeah.
When they put them out. So they'll put them out at, like, the cheap price for people who are probably trying to get them for their kids. And then they know that the collector's going to come back later and buy the complete seasons.
Yeah.
And I'm still baffled, though, why certain shows, and we talked about it before, aren't put out yet. Like the He-Man, I completely avoided that. He-Man was a guilty pleasure of mine. I'd actually be very interested in seeing it again, but I avoided, you know, when it first came out because I didn't want a compilation. I wanted to see the whole thing.
Yeah. At least the timing was a little close. It wasn't like 5 years later than, you know.
You're 100% correct.
I'm baffled that, like, I want to get the Thundercats disc, but those are, it's like $60 for like half a season or something, and like that's, you know, I don't know if any of your fans have bought that, but tell me if it's worth the money or something.
Half a season is like 40 episodes, though, from what I know, because Thundercats had incredibly large seasons. That's what I remember about it. So, again, if they were to put, you know, all of them on there, it'd be like $80. So I guess you're saving a little bit. I don't know.
Oh, well, those are... Hey, since we haven't, like, name-dropped much, I mean, the Thundercats is, like, Rankin and Bass and stuff. I mean, I don't know, do you want to touch on... I mean, those are some of my favorites as far as, you know, old-school stuff.
In fact, actually, I mean, if you guys want, I mean, if you want to name, like, maybe your top five or, you know, any more than that, if you want to add on animated series of all time to you, that might be a good way of, you know, putting in what your, you know, guilty pleasures and what your number ones are, that sort of stuff. So... I don't know. Maybe it might be hard for you to get it offhand, but I know that I can pretty much name my top five off the top of my head. So
you have a little drum roll on your cart machine there.
There you go. Good enough.
Well, you could start us off.
All right. Well, all right. Fine. I'll give you my top five. Obviously, number five is going to be the '90s Spider-Man animated series. Mostly because, like I said, it felt the most like the comic to me out of any of the Spider-Man ones. I'm gonna have to put that on there. Number four, Gargoyles. I absolutely loved Gargoyles. It's probably the most dark thing Disney has ever put out, and I hated that they did what they did with the Gargoyle by firing the creator after they switched over to ABC and made it the Goliath Chronicles, and it wasn't nearly as good a show as it was, but those first couple of seasons were amazing, and that's why I definitely got to put that on there. Number three, I've mentioned it already, Freakazoid, because I love crazy cartoons, and that was absolutely nuts. Number two, The Tick. We haven't mentioned The Tick yet, but wow. You want to talk about zany, you want to talk about nuts, and you want to talk about in-jokes. That is The Tick. After Chair-Face Chippendale tried to put his name in the moon and all he got was Cha, for the rest of the series, the moon said Cha. And that was the best part about it. There was continuity in it. And that's so hard to find. And obviously, number one has got to be Batman the Animated Series, because... nothing is more Batman than Batman the Animated Series. So that's my top five. Honorable mentions, JLU has got to be in there, because JLU is just great, period. And X-Men the Animated Series is in there as well. That would be like my sixth or seventh or somewhere along those lines. So there's my top five.
Wow. Is Jason Todd alive in the Batman Animated Series?
Actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was actually in the middle, and I might actually finish it someday. I have a fan fiction up on fanfic.net where I was introducing Jason Todd into the Batman Animated Series universe.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I was setting it in Batman Beyond time, where, like, Batman, like, Terry McGinnis is wanting to tell his family that he's Batman, and then Bruce tells him he doesn't want to, and then he starts telling him this story about Jason Todd and, you know, what happens when you tell the wrong people the wrong thing, and, it, you know, it might actually get written down someday. I'm about like six or seven chapters into it, and when I'm bored, I start writing more of it, so who knows. But never actually introduced into the animated series, but there's plenty of fanfics out there.
Wow, okay.
It's called Batman Beyond: The Day in the Dark, by the way, if anybody's interested, over at fanfiction.net. But there you go. All right, you guys got anywhere close to a top five?
Oh boy. It's hard, because a lot of mine are, like, imports and stuff, like, you know, Transformers and, you know, things like that. I mean, can I put those in, like, an Americanized
sure.
category?
I mean, the original Transformers was technically an American animation, so...
Yeah,
because if I remember correctly, it was done by Japanese animators, but aired here first. So, in my mind, that makes it an American animation. From there, Japan did a lot of series just in Japan, a lot of which never even made it here to the States, but... I'll consider the first Transformers an animated series from America. So there you go.
Okay. Well, are you ready, Sean, or should I take a stab?
Go ahead if you want. I mean, I've got like 10 gazillion different things running through my mind right now. So go ahead.
My mind isn't as trained as Ian's, where I can just succinctly, you know, hone in on five of my favorites. But I'll start with five. I'll just say, like, Rankin and Bass for creators. I mean, pretty much anything they did with, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and I'm forgetting all the holiday specials and stuff, but, you know, all the stuff that they did was really awesome. And when I was a kid, like, you know, just any of that stuff was really cool. Tex Avery, I'll do maybe by creators or something. Tex Avery and stuff, like with all of his early stuff that he did, was really awesome animation wise. And then like kind of that's kind of the early stuff for me. And then kind of like in the 70s or the 80s or whatever, Transformers and G.I. Joe, definitely like reasons why I did not want to get detention, and I wanted to go home and be home at, you know, 3 o'clock and watch cartoons. And then probably number one is, I mean, it's kind of another import, but for me, like, one of the shows that really sort of hooked me in as far as the series and, like, characters died and fell in love and it continued and it was, like, serialized and it sort of opened the whole door to Japanese animation for me was Robotech, you know, which I guess is kind of an import, but it was sort of like, you know, an Americanized version of, like, animation and stuff. So, you know, for me, like, Robotech, like, you know, like, was really a big deal. Like, when I watched that, like, you know, before school, it was like I was ready. At 7 a.m., I watched Robotech, and then I went to school, and I was ready to fight against, you know, evil forces and, you know, the Zentradi and stuff. So
And math teachers, you know.
And math teachers, yeah. And then sometimes I did fight those math teachers. But that opened, that sort of, like, from there, I kind of said, like, okay, now when I go to Comic-Cons, I got to find, you know, and I got into, like, Gundam and just, like, all different other anime things. And, you know, if I didn't, I mean, I'm sure I'd be into Japanese animation now, but Robotech would probably be, like, number one for sort of influence and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still listen to soundtracks now with, like, goofy characters singing silly songs.
Oh, God. Well, you know what? Robotech, I guess, also sort of counts because, like you said, they totally Americanized it. I mean, when you watch the original, which wasn't even called Robotech, it's a very, very different story. They even recut certain things to make it, you know, seem a bit different and obviously completely different lines with the English voice cast. Because back then, they didn't just import stuff. They made it American. And, you know, that's why Robotech can almost be considered a completely different cartoon than the original Japanese.
Yeah, it is in many ways, too, because one of my friends is a huge anime fan, and I actually got to see that. Was it Macross? Am I pronouncing it right?
Yeah, Macross Plus.
Yeah, and when you if you get a chance to see some of those, just to be able to compare how many differences there actually were to the Robotech show. I loved Robotech, too, but it was definitely, I think you can count that as American because of the fact that they changed quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. And Voltron as well. Voltron had a lot of changes over here in the States. And G-Force, which is Gatchaman over there, also a very, very different show. And also, I love looking back at G-Force and realizing how pretty much every single thing was taken from Batman in one way or another. All their vehicles, you know, all the you know, extra gadgets that they'd have to go to the, like, their utility belt type thing and take them out. And then Batman Beyond stole a lot of its stuff from Gatchaman. So the cycle continues. So in a way, Batman Beyond was stealing from itself.
Yeah, there you go.
So interesting way to look at it, I guess.
Yeah, they need to do a G-Force movie.
They should, definitely. And have Alex Ross do the character designs and stuff. That would work great.
Yeah, and even the opening segments, like they did with Spider-Man 2, where they were running his art.
Yeah.
To have a G-Force movie with live action, but then have Alex Ross art leading into it would just be, I think that would be mind-blowing, especially nowadays. Or even do it computer animated. It would be really interesting to see.
Hollywood, you're listening. I know you are.
Well, Hollywood's doing a Transformer movie, so that's hard.
And it's Spielberg's company doing it, so it should actually be somewhat decent. I think he's like, he's not director, but he's like very, very involved with the project, Spielberg. So
they say Michael Bay is the name attached to directing, but who knows if that'll go all the way through. You know, it could wind up being Brett Ratner. So
because it never lasts. It just never seems to, who they start with never seems to last.
Yeah.
And is that the way it goes now? If a director leaves, Brett Ratner comes on. Is that the way it works?
Well, he, you know, I mean, I could use him as the butt of the joke, or Alan Smithy, or something.
I'm hoping for this poor guy's sake that X-Men 3 is mind blowing.
It better be. It better be the best movie ever. You know?
Then you know what? He'll be getting an awful lot of apologies.
I mean, like Rush Hour was, you know, even though it was a comedy, you know, at least it was kind of shot and paced like well, you know.
I did like Rush Hour. I agree with you.
And you know what? Also, Superman Returns better be really, really good for his sake, or else it's going to look bad that he left X-Men 3.
Yeah.
So, hi, Brandon Routh, do a good job, thanks.
Superman, I don't know if either of you guys have been watching the video cast blogs, but I'm just, every time I watch an episode, I'm just blown away, and I can't wait, and I'll be there. I'll be the guy in line for that.
Yeah, and they're coming out with, it's not exactly the Donner cut, but they're coming out with a new cut of Superman 2 with a lot of those cut scenes involved in it, including the Marlon Brando scene. So I'm interested to see what that's going to look like.
Actually, and I want to see the reshot sequences of how Lois actually discovers that it's, that he's Superman. Because Margot Kidder, when she was at the Mid-Ohio Con, was going on and on about, she basically acted it out, and I won't say anything because I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but they're very, very different from Superman 2, and I guess they were all shot, so it'll be really cool to see. It's actually, if you're a fan at all of Superman 2, or even if you didn't like it, it's probably worth seeing this version, just to see how different it was going to be. I guess it was a lot less camp.
Yeah. And again, you can't call it the Richard Donner cut. I just got to make that perfectly clear, because Richard Donner was not involved with the production of this DVD. He saw a little bit of it, but he was doing a different movie at the time, and he felt that it had been so long that he was looking at it and saying that he actually would have done it completely different had he done it today. So going back and, trying to emulate his own style would have been very, very hard to do. So he was involved in it, but one of his closest co-creators, I think, was the one who put together the quote-unquote Richard Donner cut, as they're calling it, of Superman 2. So it's going to be close to his vision, but not the exact thing. So, again, there you go.
Well, that's the, I don't know, maybe it's my imagination, but the power of the internet. I mean, wasn't there, like, the Donner cut floating around for a while on, like, somebody's site, and then they just kind of said, like, look, you got to kill this because, we got to make some money, not you.
Yep, definitely.
Well, what that was, I guess, when they released it internationally, I guess they had put some of the scenes in from the Donner version to extend the movie. And so that isn't even really, I've seen it, it isn't really the Donner cut. It's got certain segments that were Donner's, and it actually explains which segments were Lester's segments. That it's kind of cool for to know which ones are which.
Yeah.
But it'll explain which segments are still Lester's segments, and you can tell because the actors never show their faces. Like the guy who played the president and the guy, Gene Hackman, both left the film when Donner did. So they had doubles doing them. So that's if you watch the current Superman 2, you can actually see, if you look at some of the segments, points where, like, Lex Luthor's in the distance, or where the president's being shot only from behind, that they're actually doubles.
Hollywood. If you can't get the original, just get a guy who looks slightly like him.
Or maybe just CGI that person in.
Yeah, well, these days, yeah, obviously. I mean, come on, they're CGIing Marlon Brando into a film after he's dead, for God's sake. So,
oh, boy.
Yeah. So again, going back to the animation a little bit.
Oh, yeah, I gotta give you my top five.
Give my drum roll.
Yeah.
Give Sean a drum roll. We gotta fire him out there.
Oh, boy, this is so hard. I grew up with Saturday mornings, just being glued to cartoons, because there's so many of them that were important to me, just that I had to be attached to. I'm going to give you a top five, but this is a very loose top five.
It
was funny, as you were both giving yours, and I'll stick to the ones that I was going to do, because I actually came up with five before you guys actually did yours.
Yeah.
But there, as you guys were going through, I just kept thinking, that's a great one I should have had on mine.
There's so many great animated series out there. It's very hard to, limit yourself to a top five or stuff like that.
So I guess these are probably five that I'm just emotionally attached to, which is why they came up first. So.
Okay.
I kind of put a tie on Super Friends and the current Justice League cartoon.
Okay.
Just because I can really compare the two, like the Batman 60s show to like the Batman Begins movie. It's camp versus great drama and excitement, being done in kind of the silly way and then being done right. Super Friends, for me, really got me into the whole superhero genre, got me into comic books, because that glued me into the characters. First Wendy and Marvin when they were on there, then Zan and Jaina when they were on there, they were kind of the characters that made you feel like you were hanging with the Super Friends.
Yeah.
Even though they were there for, like, the comic relief and all that, they were a little bit more accessible because they had their flaws and... little did I know how flawed the heroes actually were, but compared to their real counterparts in the comics. But at the time, they were the ones that really you could say, hey, I could see myself hanging out with the Super Friends. So that show, for me, got me into comics. Justice League today is Super Friends done right. They've paid so much attention to what really makes these characters great in the comic books, and have pulled so many great stories from the. They've even done the Legion of Doom right. They're currently doing that right now, and it's So those two, they're kind of tied. Super Friends just because of my emotional attachment, mm-hmm. and Justice League just because they're the heroes done right. So I would say that's my number one. I would definitely go with the original Spider-Man 66 cartoon. Probably, even though I said that Spider-Man is Amazing Friends is more of my favorite, that 66 Spider-Man cartoon is the one that got me into Spidey. When that theme music kicked on, you know, Spider-Man, when that kicked on, I was just glued to that show. And I still have a soft spot for that character because of that show. I am more of a like DC Comics fan, but I will rush to see any Spider-Man movie. I'll watch any Spider-Man animation. You know, if somebody's got a Spider-Man comic book, I'll start paging through it, mainly because of the fact that that cartoon just got me so into that character. And Peter Parker was such a regular guy outside of the costume that he was just immediately accessible.
Yeah. And that was definitely the case, too, and that's one of the reasons why I love that 90s version of it so well, because it did the same thing for me that you're talking about the 66 did for you. So it's amazing how, you know, different generations, people who grew up with different things can, you know, have different versions of the exact same character feel the same way, which is great.
I would say next would be Looney Tunes. I loved Looney Tunes. I loved the Saturday morning lineup. For me, it was on Saturday mornings, they had like this window dressing around the mini short cartoons where the whole Looney Tunes gang would come out dancing and there would be a curtain that would go up. And they made it seem like they were putting on this whole program and then they would do the cartoons. I particularly loved Bugs Bunny cartoons. I thought Bugs Bunny is probably one of the funniest characters of all time. I can watch a Bugs Bunny cartoon over and over and over again and still chuckle, even though I've seen them all probably about 10 gazillion times now. So for me, just a great character to latch on to. Fourth, I would say Mighty Mouse, which is kind of one I don't think I had a chance to mention. I always liked Mighty Mouse. You know, here I come to save the day.
I have not thought about Mighty Mouse in years. I'm glad you mentioned it.
Yeah, Mighty Mouse was just a great, great character for me. And you're going to see my top five is all very, you know, aside from the Looney Tunes, is all superhero related. But Mighty Mouse was just such a fun, fun cartoon. I loved Mighty Mouse. And the next one, actually, was another one we didn't touch on, Underdog. And particularly the whole show. I loved Underdog. When I watched it, and I don't know if this is the way it originally aired, I watched it, they had episodes of it on a show called Barnaby here that aired on a program that was on one of our UHF stations at the time. And they had the Underdog cartoon. They had Tennessee Tuxedo and Chumley with Phineas J. Whoopi. And those cartoons were all kind of like tied in together. And I remember just watching Underdog and Tennessee Tuxedo and Chumley and just being glued to it. Those were just great, great cartoons at the time.
So Jeff, LSD also at the time.
Yeah, exactly. But they were ones that I guess these were all cartoons that I guess just as a kid I had emotional attachments to. Mm-hmm. And I think that I still have nostalgic soft spots for them. They're things that I'll definitely, you know, be seeking out on DVD. One of my students, actually, I teach third grade, and one of my students brought in Underdog the one day. And because we have a lot of indoor recesses because of, you know, winter weather hitting and all that. So they asked the one day if we could throw on Underdog. So I brought down the projector, and during recess we watched a couple episodes of Underdog, and it was absolutely a riot. And the kids were glued to it, so it holds up still today as a decent cartoon.
You know,
the kids,
if you make something good, it'll last.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's definitely the case, and that's why those Looney Tunes cartoons are so great today, and that's why stuff like, you know, Hong Kong Phooey and Underdog and all that stuff, you can probably still watch today. Rocky and Bullwinkle, mm-hmm. another wonderful, wonderful, wonderful cartoon that is still great to watch today. So,
Rocky and Bullwinkle was just an awesome, awesome cartoon, and I like the Grimm's Fairy Tales that were always on there. And
yeah.
Peabody, actually, even more than Rocky and Bullwinkle, I liked Peabody and Sherman taking trips in the Wayback Machine.
Yeah.
Which were, those were awesome.
And I love that Simpsons reference when Homer goes back in time and they're just floating around there. That was absolutely great. Oh, man. Now, also, and I was about to say something and I completely forgot what I was going to say. Beautiful. Live radio, folks. Fantastic.
Give yourself a drum roll.
Yes,
sir.
All right, you know what? Okay, blah, 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 blah. I'll remember it any second
You should always have, like, the Darth Vader Empire theme on standby. So, like, you want to make some big dramatic statement, you just cue that up, and we'll, like, you'll have our attention, and it'll give you, like, a second to collect your thoughts. And
I know he was just going to go into a speech about Mr. T and the T-Force.
Oh, my God! I pity the foo who watches Mr. T.
Oh, boy.
God. And again, everything goes back to Robert Smigel. Nothing was greater than when they made fun of Mr. T in the T-Force, and they had him going to break the picket line trying to get some work. That was great. I'm Mr. T, and I need work.
I was dying when he did that, too, because I had watched the Mr. T cartoon, because I had a period, especially after Rocky III, where I was like, Mr. T is cool and all that. But the cartoon was very bad.
Yes.
But the only cool thing I did think that it was cool they tried to do with that cartoon is, and Shazam, even though it wasn't a cartoon, the old Shazam TV show tried to do this, too. I liked that they were trying to throw, they recognized that they had a young audience, and Mr. T always would throw in a message at the end on, just teaching kids how to do the right thing, which I think it's cool when cartoons try to do that, have a message somewhere within them to try and help, especially ones that are geared directly for a younger audience. So it's kind of cool looking back at that, but the cartoon, I'm sure that would be very painful to watch right now, especially after seeing the Robert Smigel version.
Now you know, and knowing is half the battle.
Exactly.
G.I. Joe. Oh, man. And I watched that so many times, and each time I'd be like saying it along with them. You know, that sticks in your head. I did actually remember what I was going to say. I was going to switch things over to the 3D side. Mm-hmm. And starting things off with, did you guys watch Reboot when it was on?
Oh, it's great. I got season 3 and 4 on DVD, and it pisses me off that there's no season 1 and 2 on DVD.
Yeah, it's terrible, really. I think you can get it in Canada, but that's really the only place that you could find it. Because it was a Canadian, and again, technically it's a Canadian show, but you know the fact that Canada and the U.S. are so closely linked that I guess you can consider it an American show, And one thing that was great about it is that even though it's the first 3D, it looks so gorgeous.
Yeah.
Its time, and it still holds up today. When I look at Reboot, it's so beautifully well done, and there was a story behind it, which was great.
I love 3D animation, and any of those things as Reboot started coming out, and movies were doing it, and just various different shows were starting to use that type of animation. I was glued to it, and I thought it was absolutely fantastic. My only gripe with 3D is the fact that it's led to people not wanting to do any 2D, or studios shying away from 2D, but I love 3D. I think when it's done right, it can be every bit as gorgeous as hand-drawn 2D animation. I think there's some incredibly talented people, and Reboot's a classic example of just talented people getting together and using 3D animation as not just a gimmick, as an art form.
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, as you watch it, too, you can actually watch the show evolve. As it originally started out, and like you mentioned about the gimmicks, it started out more as a gimmick than as a show. But by the time it got to the second and third seasons, you saw a storyline going on. They'd have season-long arcs. They'd have characters evolving and adapting and growing. And it was a show that you could just watch every single week and feel like you were part of the story.
Yeah, and especially being a computer geek, and being a video game fan, too, it was just, like, kind of cool because they were, like, doing little references to, being inside mainframe and the computer and everything. I'm huge, huge, huge Reboot fan. I got, like, all the toys, too. So I definitely, it's good stuff. And the thing about Reboot, I think that's different, like, if you're a CGI person or a student of CGI, is that they weren't afraid to put the camera anywhere, and I think that's like some shows or movies. You kind of get that. Like Pixar definitely doesn't care, somebody's shoelace or coming out of their eye or whatever. But Reboot, they had like these shots where it was like point of views from like nowhere else I'd ever seen before, and that's for me that's a big strong thing when you do CGI. Like I just watched the Advent Children the other day, and I was just blown away. It's the Final Fantasy II movie that came out. I don't
Final
know if
Fantasy
you guys
VII.
Have seen it.
Final Fantasy VII Advent Children.
Yeah. And, that was CGI, and, like, the camera was just everywhere, and the editing was all over, and it was just so different and so crazy. Sometimes when you see CGI stuff, it's, like, so safe, dang, my cell phone's ringing. It's throwing me off here. I'm going to go in the other room. I was going to try and cite an example of, like, a show. Like, some of the CGI shows, what's that one with, like, the O? Like, Oli, Ollie or something? Or, it's kind of a kid show. But some of the ones that are on TV now, like, the camera is just, like, off in a distance and, like, it's shooting. And it's like watching cell animation.
Yeah.
Like,
it's static.
So that was kind of my point, was as far as, like, you should fly the camera around and go kind of crazy, and Reboot really did that. And, you know,
it's like you would do a film.
Yeah.
You look for the dramatic shot, or the one that, you know, really is going to draw your viewers in. It's, I think almost the static camera nowadays is almost the lazy way out after shows like Reboot.
Yeah,
have been able to, you know, show you how effective that can be. That, you know, nowadays it's almost unforgivable that you don't try doing things like that because, you know, it's been done and done so well.
And another great example of that would be Beast Wars / Beast Machines, which, in my opinion, I think it might have very well be my favorite Transformers. Just it took everything that was wonderful about the Transformers world and added upon it. And it literally felt like the next generation of Transformers. You saw Transformers in 2D, and then it evolved naturally to the 3D. And they're literally their next generations. You know, you saw the Generation 1 Transformers, you know, in hibernation. They're all huge and, you know, old-fashioned, just like, you know, you see the CD players of old, and they're huge and old-fashioned, and then you have their compact versions. Well, this is the next generation of Transformers. They're smaller. So it sort of made sense in my mind. And the story as well was incredibly well done. And you had those shots. You had those, you know, roaming shots that were so great to see. And Beast Machines and Beast Wars were just a lot of fun.
And they could have very easily rehashed what had already been done, you know, and just taken the old series and taken a lot of those concepts and just rehashed them again. But I like the fact they were trying to evolve the series instead of just taking the easy way out and redoing the old series, you know, exactly like it had been done.
Yeah, they tried that with 2D. They tried that with, you know, like Transformers Energon and all that, and they didn't get good ratings because what's been done before is hard to redo. And that's why, you know, when you redo things like the Transformers, when you redo things like He-Man, when you redo things like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you have to give it something different. You can't just put out the exact same thing, only different animation.
Right.
Yeah, and you try and get good writers, because those shows had good writers, and a lot of the ones that, when I watch Energon and some of the newer things, it's like just cliche dialogue and hokey, and, you know, they get some good writers, too.
Yeah, definitely.
I know if we're going to move on, but just like for any of your listeners that are fans of Reboot, if they haven't also seen the Starship Troopers Roughnecks series, is like also on a par with as far as awesome animation. And then they had another series, the guys who did Reboot, it was sort of like this elemental kind of show where there was like different planets, and I'm forgetting the name, but it was...
I vaguely remember that. I'm trying to think of it right now, but I can't actually... It's like on the tip of my tongue, but it's not actually getting there.
Yeah, I mean, the main character was like a rock guy or something. It was like some warring factions all over, and you know, I'm sure if you Google Mainframe and Reboot, it probably comes up with that. But those were... It was some pretty quality, and that company that did Reboot, they do still do straight-to-video DVDs. Like, my niece and nephew were watching, like, The Prince and the Pauper, which was just, you know, not in theaters or anything. And I sat down and watched it, and I was like, wow, you know, these guys are still making some pretty kick-butt animation stuff, and it's, I wish they would do some, like, movies that were in theaters or something, because the team that was up there in Canada, you know, give them some love, because they had a good flavor for what was quality.
Yeah, they knew what it was all about. Sorry, had to.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. Well, that was the one thing, though. They had a turnover in Mainframe Entertainment, and new people took control, and that's why we didn't get a full final season of Reboot. I mean, Cartoon Network wanted it. They really, really, really wanted it, but they were not willing to give them, I think, the last four episodes of the series, and that's why it ends on a cliffhanger, because they'd never got the promised four more episodes because the new regime didn't want to do that anymore. So that's a problem, too.
Oh, it's sad.
And that's where business gets in the way of art.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, we've seen that happen, and that's another thing to talk about with 3D, how business has come into the reason why a lot of companies are no longer doing 2D animation, because they feel 3D is an easier way to go about it, when oftentimes that's not even the case. I mean, there is a lot of work that you got to put into 3D, and you know what? If you put a good story into 2D, people will go and watch it. That's the reason why people weren't going to see those Disney movies, because they just stopped putting out good stuff.
Yeah, they relied on the songs and the toys or the sequels or something. And the story, I mean, as awesome as something looks, the story is got to be just as kick-butt also. And, you know, do you guys think, now my friend And my friends and I argue, like, he believes that Incredibles was, like, the best CGI thing ever. And you know, I kind of still cling to, like, Shrek and Toy Story. I mean, do you think that Incredibles, like, blew you away more than some of those other ones? And
well, you know what? As a comic fan, as somebody who, you know, saw all the in-jokes that they put in there with, you know, some of the covers that they, you know, comic covers that were hanging on their wall and, you know, a couple references here and there, I loved it. But again, I think someone who is not a comic book fan might not, you know, feel the exact same way about it. You got to know what was happening in that to really appreciate it 100%. And I had friends that went and saw it and said, yeah, it was all right. Well, meanwhile, I'm there loving every minute, and I'm like, I got to watch this again and again and again. It's amazing.
So. I just thought the villain wasn't, like engaging to me. I don't know, like the kid coming back, and I'm assuming everybody's seen it, but I don't know, I just thought that was kind of like something that didn't grab me, you know? Like, I mean, Pixar always has, like, cool villains and stuff.
I don't know. What do you think, Sean?
Yeah, Sean?
I can definitely see what you're saying. I mean, I guess I'm a comic fan, so I'm going to be, you know, like Ian's saying, you know, I guess I got into it because of all the references. I can see where you're coming from with the villain, though. I don't know that the villain was... I don't know the villain's what got me into the movie. I think it's more all of the just blatantly well-done superhero references, jokes about capes and things like that that were, you know, as a comic fan, you can just generally appreciate how they kind of... While telling a good superhero story, there was a lot of satire about things that happen in comic books that I think you could latch onto as a comic fan. I can totally see where you're coming from, though. Perhaps where if you're more an animation fan and you're looking at that, and maybe that wasn't the strongest villain. I don't know if I would say that was the best CGI. I would say, as a comic fan, for me, that was one of my favorite Pixar films. But I'm also well aware that that was my favorite Pixar film because I'm a comic fan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I would say that they had the absolute best, most mind-blowing... I'm kind of hoping, actually, we haven't seen the best, most mind-blowing CGI yet. I think there's a lot more places they can go with this that we haven't even seen yet. I've actually seen... Some of the best CGI I've seen, to be honest, has been in video games.
That's
true. In the cutscenes, especially the stuff that Square has done, you know, which, I mean, I'm getting away from the American animation, but the Square stuff that I've seen has just been mind-blowing. And I'd like to see that. And I haven't seen Advent Children yet, but I'm guessing that I'm probably going to be just as blown away by that.
You are.
As I have been the Square CGI within their video games. And that's, I guess, I want to start seeing that mind-blowing CGI in all of my CGI movies. That's what I want to see.
Yeah. Capcom's another one, too. If you've seen the opening movies for the Onimusha games.
Oh, yeah.
And how cinematic and how lifelike and how detailed every one of those are, even with just PlayStation 2 graphics. It's amazing how they get that going. In fact, I need to pick up the latest Onimusha game because I've heard wonderful things about it. And also, I can't wait to see what the next CGI is going to look like. So it's amazing what video games can do, and I'd love to see some of that technology transfer over to the, you know, the 3D productions.
Yeah, and be able to get that kind of storytelling into film.
Yeah,
I don't think we've seen that yet. I don't know if I'm really answering your question, Robert.
It's
a good point. I am well aware that my bias towards Incredibles is because I'm a comic fan, and I would say that it's that heavy superhero love. I mean, when you heard my top five for cartoons, you know, they tend to be, you know, more superhero related. So I would gravitate towards that. I love all the Pixar movies, though, and I love the Shrek movies. So I guess my love for Incredibles comes from the superhero end of it. I don't know if I would say that I think it's the best CGI movie of all time. It's one of my favorite because of the comic references.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I didn't like it. I just, like, I don't think it's, like, on the top of the peak, you know, as far as, like, the best of the best. But, you know, some people are. So I just kind of throw it out there because I was curious, you know, if you guys hailed it as the best or not.
It's,
you know,
one of the best. It's one of the best. I think out of all of them so far, I'd have to go with Shrek 2. Shrek 2, I mean, it built upon what Shrek did. It was, in my opinion, funnier than the first Shrek was, and was even a bit more mature than the first Shrek was. And similar to what I mentioned before about, you know, Animaniacs and all that, there are probably adults that got references that they put into Shrek 2 that the kids didn't get, and yet the kids probably still absolutely loved the movie.
Yeah, like the cops stuff was great.
Yeah, definitely. And all the fairy tale characters they put into that was just wonderful.
Yeah, really, really good stuff. The square thing you guys are talking about, I don't know if you guys have seen any of the pictures, but the Kingdom Hearts 2 is going to have, like, the Tron world. I'm kind of a huge Tron fan, and if you see any pictures for that, it looks amazing, so I'm kind of jazzed about the Kingdom Hearts 2.
I have to go rent Tron on DVD, because I've only seen it once in my life, and it was randomly in the middle of the night, and I don't remember most of it, because it was just randomly on, like, HBO or something, so I got to go rent that, mostly also because, for those of you who frequent the Comic Geek Speak boards, one of the guys who is a member of the boards, his name is Seraphin on the boards, has been making avatars for everybody, and he just made me a Tron avatar. And, you know, it's my head, you know, on a Tron body, and now I got to actually, you know, watch Tron to know exactly what the hell he's talking about. So
yeah, and those, you know, those Seraphin avatars are just gorgeous. My jaw drops every time I see another one.
Definitely, yeah. And big props to Seraphin out there. Hopefully he's listening, and hopefully he hears us saying, you know, that. Well, I am going to post on the boards about this episode, so hopefully if I tell Seraphin, hey, Seraphin, we talked about you for a little bit, he'll listen to the entire thing.
Tell him to make me an icon, too. I'll pay him back some way.
He's got this, like, incredible list of avatars, too. It's like, I think he's got, like, I don't know if it was 16 or 26 that he's still backlogged on.
Yeah.
And it's, like, insane. But it's because of the quality of them.
Definitely, without a doubt. He's doing a great job on those. And also, talking about great jobs, when you talk about the animated movies, I know we haven't really touched too much on that, and I want to maybe switch over to there for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
What would be your favorite 2D animated movies that have been done? Would you put the animated, at least the few that have been out there, the few animated superhero movies on top of things like Disney movies, or do you think the Disney movies are probably better quality?
Wow. I would say quality-wise, for me personally, I'd have to go with the Disney movies. I did like the first Batman the Animated Series movie when that hit the theaters, and the name is escaping me right now.
Mask of the Phantasm?
Yes, exactly, exactly. When that came out, I was like, this is, because, you know, it was a Batman movie done right.
Yeah.
And it was so well done that, you know, I thought that was very high quality. But I would say what Disney was doing, especially the recent movies like Lion King, Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, those type of things, the quality that went into those, it was great. Even the older ones, like Peter Pan's one of my all-time favorite old-time movies, the quality in that still holds up today to what people are doing. Because especially when Walt was involved with their studio, you know, the movies took forever to create. He basically didn't stop until, you know, it was art. And that shines through. Sleeping Beauty, we were watching the other day, and, you know, while it's, you know, tends to be more of a girl's story, I actually got really very into it, mainly because it was just, the art was gorgeous. The backgrounds and things that they were doing, you know, for every reason that I like comic books, those old Disney movies, you know, don't dismiss them as kid stuff. They're definitely worth checking out and really paying attention to what was going on there. Little minute details in the background and things that they did is really, I think that's one of the things that is missing in 2D animation now with some of these art studios closing down.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Rob, how about you?
Well, the old Disney movies, definitely, you know, a lot of love for them with Snow White, Pinocchio, stuff like that. I kind of veered away once they started getting into Beauty and the Beast and Lion King, because I was already into, like, Japanese animation. I was watching, like, Miyazaki films and things like that. So, I haven't even seen some of those. I mean, you know, like, when the nephew and niece are in town and pop them on and stuff, I kind of consider those babysitting material now and stuff.
Yeah.
But as far as the superhero movies, it's weird because my comic geekdom hasn't really shown much on this conversation, but I am kind of a huge comic fan, and a lot of the shows and animation I just kind of skipped because, like, for me, like, I don't know, like, for me, the comic characters are living in the comics to some degree, and, like, when I start watching them in, like, different alternate universes and doing things, that it kind of takes away a little bit of, like, my love for, like, you know, what's going on with Batman and Gotham and, you know, his specific storylines and stuff. And, you know, sometimes I don't even get, like, all different issues of, like, you know, like, if there's Detective and Batman, I kind of stick to one or something. And so I haven't seen a lot of the JLAs and the Batman stuff. I mean, outside of, you know, here and there, and it looks great. But, you know, I think recently, I mean, I guess it's kind of a, like the Iron Giant is something that really I kind of like as far as, you know, I mean, it's got like CGI kind of crossover, but I really thought that was pretty amazing. And when I was younger, maybe like The Rescuers Down Under was like really a good one when I was a kid.
Oh, wow. That, it has been so long since I've even thought of that. Holy crap.
And that was great because that did have some computer animation mixed into that one where they, I mean, it was, you know, very subtle. Mm-hmm. But they did use some computer animation, especially during some of the flight scenes and things like that. Combined with the hand-drawn. If you go and watch it again, you can see certain segments where there's blatantly some CGI in there. Not a lot. I mean, and it's really, you have to watch for it. Similar to what Beauty and the Beast did. They had a ballroom scene in Beauty and the Beast that definitely used, and I'm not sure how the process was handled, but I know that there's, I don't know if it was a combination of hand-drawn and CGI animation or how they did it, but Disney was experimenting with that, with those movies, and really combined the two really, really well. So, actually, yeah, if you get a chance to watch Rescuers Down Under again, there is some computer animation in there, and they integrated it so well that it's very hard to tell where it is.
And that's what I like. I like it when it's subtle. You know, I like it when it doesn't, like, jar you away from it. Like, one of the, they've gotten better with Justice League Unlimited, but with some of the CGI that they've added into that, it just, it really feels like it just does not fit with the rest of the animation. It feels like it's almost, it sticks out. You know, I like it when it blends in and just adds to it. With the Spider-Man animated series from the 90s, what I loved is that when he was going through that, you know, almost completely CGI 3D New York, it felt real. You know, and that's something that a lot of those, you know, combinations are missing in today's world. An example that I'll mention, I don't know if you guys have seen it yet, but Ultimate Avengers. Ultimate Avengers, some of the CGI in that just really feels out of place. And I mean,
is that the one that just came out on DVD?
That's the one that just came out, yeah.
And that's actually my biggest gripe with that movie. The story was great.
Yeah.
I really liked the story. But for me, it was like the animation. It was like, I don't know if I want to say it wasn't finished, but it could have been more polished, I guess is what I'm, you know, like there's little things that they could have done that for me would have taken it to another level.
Yeah, I talked about it on a previous episode. It felt like, well, actually, yeah, just on my Comic-Con wrap-up that I did this past week, basically it felt like a extended pilot for a TV series. It didn't feel like it was a movie, and mostly the animation was the fault of that. It felt like those old 90s animated series. I didn't really see anything that really jumped it into me. And also the biggest gripe that I had is that they couldn't get Phil LaMarr, but they got a Phil LaMarr impersonator to voice Nick Fury.
It was funny. After I heard your episode, I ended up watching it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? It's so right. This is a pilot.
Yeah. I mean, they just got a guy who sounds just like Phil LaMarr when he's doing Jon Stewart. And
right.
I mean, when you hear it and then you look at the credits and it's not him, I almost felt hurt. I'm like, dear God, just get a different voice if you can't get the original, you know? Oh, man. But also, going with those Disneys again, what the hell is up with the sequels? You know, I mean,
straight to video.
And the sad part is, too, it's funny, when he was mentioning Rescuers Down Under, when you're talking about sequels, they have done so much great animation that's been original. Like DuckTales. They had that DuckTales movie, and I'm forgetting the complete name of that one, but the whole DuckTales series and the movie combined was just great animation and just very well done.
Darkwing Duck. Darkwing Duck was another great one.
Absolutely. And they've done such a good job of, you know, maybe not necessarily as sequels, but taking some of their, you know, characters, and, you know, they did it with Baloo and Tailspin. They did it with Chip and Dale and Rescue Rangers, where instead of doing just a blatant sequel, they kind of told a different story, you know, kind of like they shifted the universe around, so to speak. Why they feel the need to do these direct sequels, like there's a new Bambi that came out. Now, I didn't see it, so I you know, it might be the greatest movie ever.
Sean, my heart hurt when I saw that.
Okay.
Seriously. I mean, I've only seen like bits and pieces of it here and there. You know, I saw the trailers and I saw a little bit online. Seriously, the idea of a Bambi 2. You're taking a story, a heartfelt story, possibly the best one they've ever done, about a deer that loses its mother, the sad, sad story, and then they put it back with the father. You know? I mean, it takes away so much from the original. And doing this, you're just doing it for money.
And Walt didn't do sequels.
Solely money, yeah.
Yeah.
When you look back on Walt's whole career, he didn't do sequels.
Yeah.
Everything was, you know, the new story, the new, you know, he would get into the new one. And, you know, you look back on that history, and he didn't do, you know, he did original stuff. And the problem, I guess, I don't have so much a problem with the idea of a sequel as the fact that these are being pumped out as these direct-to-video releases, mainly just to get money.
Yeah.
And I guess that's where, when I've seen interviews with Walt Disney talking about what he was trying to do, and then I see these direct-to-video releases, that I'll honestly admit, I've seen a couple of the sequels that I thought were okay. And that's the problem I have, though. I'm seeing these, and I'm like, they're okay.
Yeah.
Whereas the originals, to me, are so close to my heart that seeing an okay sequel actually ruins the original for me.
Yeah. And see, it's funny you should mention that, because in my mind, the Aladdin sequels that they did were probably the best.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I almost blame the Aladdin sequel's success for these other sequels happening. And even though I like them, even though I found them to be very, very good quality when compared to the original, it's the fact that these succeeded that they thought, hey, let's make a sequel out of The Little Mermaid. Hey, let's make a sequel out of The Lion King. Hey, let's make a sequel out of all the old ones that we haven't talked about in a while. Ooh, Cinderella. That one's a great one. Cinderella, for God's sakes. And it closed story they make a sequel of. I mean, no reason whatsoever for anything like that.
Disney is the enemy, really. They really are the enemy.
Oh, God. And
it's funny you mentioned that Little Mermaid sequel, because I saw that one because I loved Little Mermaid so much.
Yeah.
That was one of, because that was like the first one of their big, you know, comeback. And the animation was so great in Little Mermaid. And it just, you know, when I saw it the first time, I thought, I'm not going to like this. Because, you know, it wasn't, you know, the whole story concept, I'm like, this is just kind of, you know, it's a kid's thing and all that. I loved it. I thought it was beautiful animation, everything. So I saw two thinking, you know, I'm going to like this because I really liked the first one. They really basically almost retold the exact same story from the first movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like the laziest sequel of any movie series that I'd ever seen, much less an animated one, because they basically, yeah, they threw in a couple little twists, but why did the story need to even be told? It just blew me away. And it was really basically such an example of cashing in on the success of the very first movie.
Yeah, it's definitely the case. And also, I think out of all of them, the one that was the most creative, I think, was probably Lion King 1/2. Because you're getting the story from Timon and Pumbaa's side of things. So it was basically the same story that you saw happening in The Lion King, but you saw it from other characters' eyes. That's something that I like to see, but just going back and telling pretty much the exact same story with, you know, no extra additions, that's sort of lame.
Yeah, and you're right. Lion King 1/2 was very cool in how they did it, because it was a neat little twist on the story. And it was really, that's one where I was okay with it being direct-to-video because of what they were doing. It was blatantly a side story. It was blatantly meant to be a little slapstick look at the original Lion King movie. So I gave them, I guess that one I really did give a little bit of leeway on, because it really was everything that direct-to-the-video should be.
Oh, boy. I couldn't watch any. By the time those Disney movies were out, I was watching like Vampire to D with people dying and getting killed, and like having characters sing and dance, like, you know.
And you know what? You're right. It is hard to compare some of the current American animation if you watch anime,
mm-hmm.
because especially that they're dealing with, you know, you can put a lot of the anime out there with, you know, current, you know, film releases out
yeah.
there. And I honestly, though, I think that's one of my issues with American animation right now. When, you know, okay, those were all musicals, and if you're not into musicals, I can see people shying off from those Disney movies because they're musicals. I like musicals, so I was into, like, Lion King, Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, because I, you know, they were very well done that way. But my problem with that was Lion King, Little Mermaid, and Beauty and the Beast deserve to be in the theaters.
Yeah.
They were that kind of production quality, just like anime is.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the anime films that are out there that I see, I'm like, this, you know, doesn't matter that it isn't, you know, live action.
Sure,
It's the storyline and the drama and the characters and just the quality. It's all about quality. And, you know, they deserve to be up there with any other, you know, theater releases.
Definitely.
And what bothers me right now is that we aren't seeing American animation that is that quality. And I think that there's talented people out there that could be doing it. I just don't think that the studios are behind it. They're seeing the success of your Shreks, and which, I mean, I love those movies, so it's not a knock on those movies. I love a lot of what they're doing with the CGI and the 3D animation and all that. I think they're great. But I think the problem is that they've put some stinkers out there in the 2D,
yeah.
And they tanked because that's just what they were, and they've shied away from it when they need to start taking a look at what they're doing with anime and how successful that can be when you put out a good story and good quality and get back to that in American animation, because we have the talent. You know, it's just that, and you know, maybe it's, you know, a lot of times those talents have been that we've used combos of talents from our country and from other countries put together to make a great movie. I know Disney was huge on that. They had studios all over.
Yeah.
And they've gotten rid of those studios.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, also mentioning, I mean, you mentioned the animes being, you know, meant for the theaters. When I saw Ghost in a Shell 2 in the theaters, I was lucky enough to see that over at 42nd Street here in Manhattan. It was amazing, you know, being able to see a lovely production like that on a huge screen, you know, with the beautiful sound and all that. It felt like it was a production that was meant to be seen in a theater. And so many American animations, when I go to see them in the theaters, I'm saying to myself, why didn't I just wait for the DVD release? Because there's no reason for me to be here right now.
And that's the big problem nowadays. I think they gear things too much, and I love DVDs. I think they gear everything too much to the DVD release because the movie theaters aren't making money. And I understand that from a business perspective of what they're doing. But I think if you made it a special enough experience, you would get those butts in the theaters.
Yeah, definitely. And another thing, I mean, obviously, a lot of you mentioned the taking the creators from other countries. I mean, The Simpsons is not animated here in the U.S. and never has been. And right away, you can see that. I mean, there's other things. The Animatrix. They took Japanese creators, brought them over here to the U.S. and, you know, had them create this wonderful, wonderful anime style stuff that you basically couldn't even technically call anime because they did it here in the States. Another thing, the Chronicles of Riddick animated that they did alongside of the latest Chronicles of Riddick movie.
Mm-hmm.
That one was actually really well animated. It was done by the same guy who did Aeon Flux. And
yeah, that was looked good.
Yeah, it looked really, really good. I'd like to see some American animation that actually looks really, really good and gives me a reason to see it in the theaters, but I'm not going to see that anytime soon.
You know what? I got to ask. How was that Chronicles of Riddick anime? I mean, as far as how was the story?
The story wasn't 100% perfect. I liked the animation. I'd give it maybe a 3 out of 5. It was like middle of the road. So if you're a fan of Riddick, you'll like it.
So we're checking out.
Yeah, it's worth.
If you're a fan of Riddick,
it's worth renting. Yeah, it's
okay.
Definitely worth renting.
Queue it up on your Netflix.
Exactly.
That's what I was just thinking. I'm like, is this something I should check out?
Because
I did see all the Riddick movies. I just that one I completely missed. I remember that it came out, and I don't know why I never saw it. But
hopefully.
3 out of 5 sounds to me like it's worth running, so
yeah.
I will have to definitely check that out.
Yeah, definitely. And to go over to the Japanese influence once again, obviously one of the biggest ones out there, and there is going to be a movie of it, so I have to announce that here for those of you who haven't seen that online, Teen Titans Go. Now, Teen Titans Go is probably the most Japanese anime-influenced cartoon out there that has aired in the U.S. I mean, it's completely obvious, from the big eyes to the tear running down the face every now and then to the chibis. I mean, basically, it's a Japanese anime done here in the U.S. The style never really appealed too much to me because I was expecting something similar to, you know, the Perez years of Teen Titans, and I thought it was going to be like a Dini-style animation at first, and then I got that, and I was a bit upset. But there certainly is a draw. Now, what do you guys think about the major Japanese influence of cartoons to the point where it's almost as if there is no technical American animation style anymore?
Wow, I think it works in some places and others it doesn't. Titans, just to give a different perspective on it, I like you, when I first watched the first couple episodes, I never wanted to watch it again, mainly because of the fact that I was, I'm a Bruce Timm and Paul Dini advocate. I love everything they do, and I think, they have so captured what our characters look like, right down to the look. They've got a definite style. When I started seeing, though, they had the whole Terra saga that they aired on the Teen Titans show. I started getting back into the Titans cartoon because they have been adapting so many cool storylines right from the comic that it drew me back in. And I kind of see it more as like, at least in my eyes, I see it more as a side universe now, and I've grown to appreciate it for what it is. I'm anxious for the movie because of the fact that the series has drawn me in, and I do like it now. I think, to answer, and I'm getting a long-winded way to get to the answer to your question, I think it can be done well, but I think it's being overdone.
Okay.
I think they are blatantly trying to cash in on the video game craze, because I think that's where a lot of the Americanized anime is coming from. Kids are seeing that in their video games, so they're trying to use that as a hook to pull them into the television programs. And that might be, that's kind of my assumption on it. But I think that's where this is coming from, that they're trying to use, to latch onto the video game market. And I think it's being done very well on some things, and I do think Titans is doing it well. I think it is jarring, though, as a comic fan at first to see that.
Yeah.
And but my kids are glued to it, they're glued to it because it is well done. But I think there's other ones that it's just I think they're trying to latch onto that market, so that's why everything's looking that anime style. I think it is really the video game market that they're trying to latch onto now.
Yeah, when I first saw Teen Titans, it felt almost as if it was almost a parody of Japan as opposed to a tribute to it. And that's another reason why I sort of shied away from it, because it felt like, you know, they weren't trying hard enough to, you know, get the style down. They were just sort of barely emulating it and saying, hey, this works for them. Why don't we try it here?
And I see it now as a Titans cartoon as opposed to with its own style, as opposed to blatantly seeing it as a it's blatantly a ripoff of anime. I mean, there's no way to look at it. I mean, it really is. But I guess I've kind of started to see it as its own style now, because I've gotten to the stories of it, and I can definitely see why it's got a fan following, and I've become a fan of it because of it. But I do think it's being overdone now. It's every cartoon that I'm turning on right now has got that anime style, which I like, but I don't think everything needs to look like that. I think the problem is when you compare it to the actual anime, it does come off looking like a parody, and that's where I think you're getting that impression from, because of the fact that we're doing it and not doing it as well, that I think it comes off looking as something that I don't think they intend it to look like.
Yeah. What about you, Rob? What do you think about the situation?
Well, you know, America is the melting pot, and you know, we are sort of always absorbing, you know, other cultures and states and countries and stuff. So, I mean, that's kind of how we sort of evolve, and anime has been like the last probably 15 years has been kind of what we're kind of ripping off. You know, you got kids who grew up watching like Dragon Ball, so like the first thing they're going to want to draw is like stuff that's anime now, you know. So like it's kind of influenced. It's good and bad. I mean, you don't want like everything to look the same, but it's hard to. Who are we to say what is good and bad anyway? I mean, one thing that just when Sean was talking, I was kind of thinking of a show or an animator that I think is American, but it's kind of an anime influence, but sort of original and different, and I don't know his name, but the show that he was doing with Samurai Jack.
Yeah, that would be Gennady Tarkatov, is that what it is?
Yeah, see, I can never remember that.
Yeah.
Wasn't he chatting with Clone Wars, too?
Yeah, he did
Clone Wars. Yeah, the Clone Wars,
yeah.
Which was great. Yeah.
He did Clone Wars, he did Dexter, and he did Samurai Jack.
Okay.
Yeah.
But is he considered an American animator?
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, I mean, I think that, like, I was trying to think of an example of, like, well, you know, that's a totally original style that definitely has influences of, you know, Hong Kong and Japanese cinema in it, but, you know, it's still sort of unique and different. It's not just, like, him penciling over, you know, some sort of animation thing and stuff. So people should, you know, like, look at guys like that, or you know, if when they come out with, like, an original voice, like the Peter Chung guy, whatever, the Ian Flux, is like, you know, definitely styles borrowed, but still an original voice that was worth checking out. But I totally see you guys talking about the Titans and stuff with like that really sharp edges on the hair and stuff like that. And, you know, I just dislike when like they have like a shot where somebody's posing with their mouth open and the camera just pans across and there's like a gulping sound effect or something. That's where I think, you know, Jap animation is, you know, goes wrong. And anybody who rips that off should die. So yeah.
That now see, the views expressed by Robert Welkner are not necessarily the views expressed by GeekSpeak or any of its partners. Okay, there we go.
All the female and male listeners today, you know.
Yes, we only have dogs listening now. Now, one animation that's out there that borrows a lot from the Japanese style and even has some Japanese animators involved with it is The Boondocks. And when you look at that, you can certainly see the anime style in it, to the point where I believe there actually are, and you, don't quote me on this, but I'm almost certain about this, that some of the animators that were involved with Samurai Champloo actually do The Boondocks to give it that, you know, natural Japanese feel to it. But it's obviously not a Japanese story, and not even close to a Japanese story. But when they have, you know, fake fight scenes, you know, you'll see them, you know, slashing swords and all that, and it'll feel like it's Japanese. But the style is beautiful, and that's what I like so much about it. It doesn't matter that it's, you know, done by Japanese. It doesn't matter that it's in a Japanese style, but it's just, it's gorgeous, and it's a great story. And that's something that's lacking in a lot of the, you know, similarities with some of the other cartoons. They're not gorgeous, and that's the problem.
Yeah, gorgeous and good stories. Definitely, definitely that's a plus.
Yeah, without a doubt there. And sort of switching things over to something that would probably be the last thing that we end up talking about, because God only knows how long it's going to take us to talk about it. We got to talk about the Deanieverse, since we have, like, we've touched on it ever so slightly, but the Timverse / Deanieverse is probably one of the best American animation achievements in all of American animation history. It's basically was able to put together about four or five animated series that were all together in one cohesive unit, and you never see that in today's world at all. And that's what's so great about the Deanieverse / Timverse. All these things roll together. There's a long-standing continuity, and even if you're just getting into it, they explain it enough where you'll actually be able to sit down and not be, who is this guy and what's he doing sitting on the screen? Because these are classic characters, and most of the situations that they're involved in, they do end up explaining, but it's great for people who have been watching it since it started.
And you know what's great about them, too? There's been a lot of talk recently about comics and continuity and how sometimes it's inaccessible to people. Almost all the series, I don't know if the Superman one ever had a cartoon that went along with it, but I know, you know, Batman has had multiple series that went along with the Tim and Deanieverse. There's been the Justice League spin-off comic book that's come from it. That's a great way for people to take a stab at comics if you've never read comics before, because if you like those cartoons, they have comics that are right in that universe that you can jump into, and really, if you've been watching the cartoons, the comics are completely accessible because they're right from that universe, and they're kind of their own separate side story outside of the DC universe, which is really, really great.
Definitely, without a doubt. I mean, the fact is, you don't have to have read any comics at all to enjoy this, but it might very well lead you to read comics, which is great for the comic industry itself.
Especially because they're so close to the characters.
Yeah.
The Batman portrayed in Batman the Animated Series and now in the Justice League, I mean, it was, the movies should be ashamed of themselves. You know, it's Batman Begins, I think, is, you know, obviously the closest, I think, to the true Batman that we've gotten in live action. But, you know, those original movies, you know, before that.
Joel Schumacher, that's the other guy who gets all the films outside of Brett Ratner.
Yeah. That name is like a swear word now.
Yeah.
Two words, bat nipples.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
You know what the funny part is, though? It's, I'm a lot more forgiving of, in the Spider-Man movies, the little subtle changes they've made than the bat nipples. because the stories were so bad.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, with my animation, I think that what the Deanieverse and Timverse are so good at is telling good stories. And I think with anything, while I love beautiful, gorgeous animation, while I love great stories, when they get both in one, that's when it's truly art. And you just your jaw drops and you're glued to it. And I think they've done that with the Tim and Deanieverse. They've got it looks great, the stories are great. It sounds great because even, you know, the music and everything that goes along with it is just top-notch. That it just feels like watching an episode of one of those feels like an event. And that to me is what quality animation is all about. I should feel like I am a part of some event.
Oh, definitely. And it has some of the most natural voice acting out of any of the series I've ever watched in my life. these guys feel like they are the characters, and they get it down as if they're just reading a script and, you know, they're actually acting it out in real life. You know, it's not like they're trying to pretend to be a cartoon. They're just acting, and that's great to see.
Yeah, it's good stuff, those guys. I haven't watched all those shows, but definitely it's good stuff there.
And I got to compare it, the Batman to Batman Animated Series here. The Batman, are you fans of it? Because I sort of can't stand the face of it.
The Batman? What do you mean?
The Batman, the animated series that's currently out, that's more of a, that's done by the same guys as the Jackie Chan Adventures.
Oh boy!
And it's basically a new version of Batman's, you know, origin, where he's, you know, first starting off, and they redid all the characters. And
it's like his third year, I guess, is what they're saying.
Basically, yeah. He's been around for a little bit. They just introduced Batgirl, and now they're going to be introducing Robin, now that Teen Titans is done with. And I can't stand the art style. I'm sorry. Seeing Batman look way too much like Jackie Chan, sort of not my thing.
Yeah, that's going a little too far.
I don't know, I guess I would offer a little bit of a different perspective on it, because I had to divorce myself completely with thinking of the Tim and Dini universe.
It's hard to do.
Because first of all, it's so much better, and I will say that. The Tim and Dini Batman animated series is just, for me, the pinnacle. I like this one. I don't love it.
Okay.
I enjoy watching the episodes of it. I think it's good. In and of itself, but I have to completely separate it from that and look at it as a new take on it. It's kind of like the Legends of Dark Knight book, where, you know, a different artist team will come on and take a stab at Batman. I'm kind of looking at this like I am that, as opposed to looking at it as a continuation of the Batman story that was told in the Diniverse, because that's really being continued in Justice League anyway, because their universe is their own kind of thing. I like it. Is it going to be something that I'm going to seek out DVDs for or anything? No. But I'm enjoying watching it in and of itself. It's definitely one, and maybe for some people it might be another one like Teen Titans, where, and that might be why I can see with you saying that you don't like Teen Titans, that you wouldn't like the Batman.
Yeah.
Because it does what Teen Titans does, in the sense that it tries to do a sort of anime style with Batman.
Yeah, but that was done already with Batman Beyond, and it was done good.
Right. Yeah, you're right. And, well, Batman Beyond, again, was that part of the Diniverse?
Yeah, it okay. is. It is, because obviously...
And that stuff, I don't know that you can compare any attempts at superheroes to anything that the Diniverse has done.
Because
it's been done so perfect and so well that I hesitate. I guess I looking at the Batman as a cartoon on its own, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
If I were to compare it, I would probably hate it if I kept looking at it in comparison. So I don't when I watch it. I just watch it as a cartoon in and of itself. It's a different take on Batman. It's more of a modern take. I will say this. I teach third graders. I don't hear my kids talking about the Batman cartoon.
Okay.
They did the Teen Titans. So I think what they were attempting to do is to get kids into Batman. And I don't hear my kids talking a lot about the Batman the way that they did. Both boys and girls in my class will talk about Teen Titans. So I think Teen Titans really captured a younger audience towards these comic book characters, whereas, I can only speak on my own kids that I deal with, I don't hear my kids talking about the Batman.
You guys looking forward to the Legion of Superheroes that's going to be coming soon?
Oh, it's going to be great.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping it's Diniverse, because they haven't actually officially announced that yet, but considering the setup they had for it in JLU, it would just be absolutely perfect to just go on it from there.
From what I've read, it looks like they're pulling in people from both Titans and Justice League for it.
Okay.
Which I don't know if that's good or bad, or who they're pulling in or what.
Well, they seem to be trying to bridging the gap between those two different universes a bit more, you know, with Speedy showing up in JLU and Nightwing showing up in Teen Titans. I see that they're trying to bridge that gap a little more, to the point where even the same guy who voiced Flash in JLU voiced Kid Flash in Teen Titans. A lot of people are saying that this is basically, you can actually place
this. That's the guy from Smallville.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can actually place this That's Michael Rosenbaum, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You can sort of place Teen Titans Go before a Batman animated series.
Why do they have to do that?
I don't know. I really don't, but they seem to be wanting to do that a lot.
And actually, one of the reasons why I'm enjoying the Batman right now, just for example, is that I am not trying to see it in the Diniverse.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be a part of the Diniverse. I enjoy Batman Elseworlds books, so I'm looking at this the way I look at a Batman Elseworlds book. I can approach the Batman as a story in and of itself outside of the Tim and Diniverse. I don't necessarily want it to be considered, and I'm not saying they're trying to do that with the Batman, but I'm saying I don't, like the Teen Titans cartoon, I enjoyed it. I don't necessarily want to think of it as canon in the Diniverse.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they feel that they need to bridge that gap. It'd be like taking the X-Men cartoon, you know, the one that the first X-Men cartoon, and trying to bridge that with X-Men Evolution.
Oh God!
You don't need to do that. It it doesn't make sense to. They're both different stories. They were told in different universes, and why can't that be left alone?
And now they're coming out with from the sounds of things, they're trying to work on a new animated series with the X-Men that's going to focus on Wolverine. And I'm thinking to myself, didn't they do that with the other two already? You know, they sort of don't need to say that it's going to be focusing on Wolverine. It's going to end up doing so in the end. So.
I'm hoping it's good. I saw that too, and I'm kind of mixed on it because I'm just, all I care about is that it's good. I think that's part of the problem with the Dini and Timverse is they've set such a high standard on what comic book series, cartoon series should be, that they're like the Death Star to any other one that like tries to come out, because you're instantly going to have to think about them at least when you are looking at a series.
Yeah. What about you, Rob? What do you think about the upcoming Legion?
I've been playing video games a lot lately. I haven't even seen a lot of these Dini verses and stuff, and just bits and pieces. I'll have to check it out. What is that on Cartoon Network?
Legion of Superheroes is going to be on Cartoon Network. They're showing JLU right now, and you'll probably actually be able to see the reruns every now and then. If you don't find them, I have the episode, so I could just like send it to you through mail or something along those lines if you want. So
yeah, I'd had I known I'd be on the show today, I would have checked out some a little more of the newer shows, because with podcasting, I don't even watch as much TV, I watch my Geek Speak with Ian Leavitt. I mean, I listen to it, and I don't have time for cartoons,
Well, I'm so sorry for cutting into your cartoon life, man. God. And by the way, just to mention this.
Don't apologize. He gave you a plug.
Yeah, I know.
Live from Brooklyn College.
God damn it. I still say it. Someday I will replace that with a better opening when I have the time, but... And by the way, Toby Cook was going to be joining us today. Just a quick hello to Toby. He had to get money from his parents, so that's where he is. So it's much better that he's feeding himself for the next couple of months than being on the air. And we were lucky enough to get Robert to fill the place. So there you go.
I thought that your fans wrote in and they just thought that I said the word and because I've been trying not to say at all during this showcase, and I just figured there's no way I'm going to be on the air again. But somehow I made it back. So hello Geek Speak listeners. Thanks for hearing my voice.
Just when you thought you were out, they pull you back in.
I've been trying to avoid doing ums.
Yeah. Well,
I find myself like I'll record things every so often for Comic Geek Speak and send it to them. And I'll have to sometimes do it like two or three times because I'll listen back to it again and every 5 seconds is an
Yeah.
Which I do when I naturally pause. I throw that in there, but it doesn't sound very well when you're doing that on a podcast.
For me, there's way too many ands. That's the one thing I've got to get out of there. I've gotten the uhs out, but I say and but way too often. I just got to get those out of there. All right, so to wrap things up a bit here, Sean, you're probably the best person to ask about this since you do teach, it's third graders, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now
I work at a school, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, on Saturdays.
Oh, cool.
My kids talk about is Naruto now.
Naruto.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And Naruto, by the way, it's good, but I really don't see the reason why it's such a gigantic fad, but that's just me. Okay, so both of you guys can pretty much have a good place on this. These cartoons survive by passing it on to the next generation. Do you think that the next generation is going to embrace American animation as much as previous generations have? Or do you feel it's basically something that might very well end in favor of Japanese animation sometime soon?
I want to say that there's a reason why a lot of our cartoons are going to more of a Japanese style. I would say because of the fact that our kids are such a video game audience, that I think today's cartoons are trying to latch onto that, because really, if you take a look at the video game market, that's where the money is right now, even more so than actual movies. The video games are just a huge market, and I think that our animation companies are trying to capture that. So I would say, I don't know if it's necessarily going to latch on so much to anime as much as I think we're going to be seeing more of this Americanized Japanese animation style.
And 3D, obviously.
Yes. Yeah, well, the Pixar stuff is going through the roof. So we're definitely going to see more of that. And Shrek, and, you know, is that DreamWorks? Or?
Yeah, that's DreamWorks.
Okay, yeah, so you're going to see a lot more of the DreamWorks stuff. You know, there's another Ice Age coming out. Has that already come out?
Ice Age 2?
Yeah.
Ice Age 2, I think, is coming out.
That'll be this summer.
Yeah,
okay.
Something along those lines.
I've seen Mars posters for that, so I didn't know if that was already out. But, you know, I think we're going to see a lot more of those because they're so well done, and I think they're capturing the video game market, the ones that are used to that computer animation and the Japanese-style animation within cutscenes, that I think that that's their style.
How about you, Rob?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if I had to predict the next 5-10 years, I'd say, you know, more CGI, less traditional cell animation, and whatever is cell animation will probably be anime-influenced. You know, people eat, you know, whatever, what they like, they'll eat and buy and digest, and when they get tired of it, then we'll see new stuff. But there'll be the occasional things that come out, and, you know, like the SpongeBobs and stuff that doesn't look like Japanese animation at all, that's kind of quirky and weird that kids all love. So there'll always be that. But definitely I agree with Sean with video game influence and cutscenes and things like that with more. I mean, it seems like it's getting cheaper and cheaper now with render time and, you know, animating and stuff like that. So I'm sure we'll see more quality shows like the reboots and things like that. And I always thought the Cubix or Rubix show was kind of cool, but it didn't really last for very long, just for a CGI show. Cubix, I think it was
Cubix,
called?
Yeah, yeah. Cubix, C-U-B-I-X.
Yeah, that looked pretty awesome, but, you know, I probably was around for like a year or something, but who knows? I don't know, you know, like, it's just as long as it doesn't look lazy, because that's my only sort of thing, like when I see a lot of shows and it just looks like lazy, and by that I just mean, like, detail is very, like, in a very minimal, and like, you can really, like, you know, it's just probably money and time constraints, stuff like that. So, you know, if anything, I hope that things just keep getting more detailed and true to the characters and stuff. I mean, when you guys are talking about voice characters crossing over, I think that's a good thing when they sort of devote that much sort of tension and time to sort of stay true to the books and everything.
Yeah, definitely.
That's very good.
And also, I guess one final to the final question, will Pixar bring back the Disney 2D like they want to now that they're running the animation studios?
Well, 2D will be around. It'll be back. We'll have like a year where like all three Oscar movies or whatever for best animation are like all sell, and you know, the CGI will, I don't even know, what the heck is up? Tonight's the Oscars. I mean, what the heck is up for best animation this year?
That would be a very good question.
I mean, that just shows how little I paid, you know, attention to.
I'm just watching the Oscars for Jon Stewart, so I really, and no, not the Green Lantern, the guy from The Daily Show, so.
No predictions?
I predict that Jon Stewart will be funny.
Yeah, I'd probably be funny.
And I predict that Brokeback Mountain will win everything. So,
hold on.
Yeah, because you know, movies about gay cowboys are, you know, the in thing, so.
Yeah.
All right, and Sean, what do you think? Do you think that Pixar is actually going to save 2D for Disney and possibly bring it back to what it used to be?
They could. I think one of the things that has made the Pixar film so successful is not just the fact they were CGI. excuse me. It's the fact that Pixar has great stories and
yeah.
great humor and just great characters, and there are things you can latch on to. I think for me, if you know, when you were asking me about my top five animation, it was because of characters and stories that I latched on to that really drew me in. I think Pixar definitely knows how to create those characters. I think they're a studio that has proven they know how to do that, so I think they could bring that back to 2D animation, and we could see a resurgence of that if they produce that same quality. Because it really is about quality. You're going to get people talking, And maybe the first film it'll be that'll come out, and because of the buzz from people who've seen it and from, you know, things like the Oscars we talk about, you know, maybe that'll be one that will stand out at the Oscars, and it'll be that it has a resurgence the second time around in the theater or something that that'll bring that back. But I think Pixar is definitely a company. If you attach their name to it, people will take notice.
Definitely.
More so than Disney now. I think Pixar generates a bigger buzz than Disney does. And I think that putting them and attaching them to it brings more notoriety to the 2D than I think that even Disney does at this stage.
It's all part of the cycles. You know, it was Warner Brothers for a while, and then it was Disney, and now it's Pixar. So,
well, what's going to happen is Cars is going to come out and totally tank, and then, you know, Pixar is going to like decide, like, hey, you know, let's go ahead and do some cell animation. Give it a shot.
But, well, you know what? If Cars comes out and tanks, though, that totally throws what I just said out the window. So I'll make an addendum. If Cars comes out and tanks, forget everything I just said.
Oh,
I wasn't
man.
Thinking.
Yeah. That's the way, you know, big Hollywood studios are. Like, if one movie comes out, if when Godzilla came out and tanked, well, it did kind of make a lot of money, but it was kind of silly. You know, it was like, if that movie did great, we would have saw like 1,000 more Godzilla and Mechagodzilla and Gamera and stuff. But everything's dictated a lot by you know, the moolah, the dollar, and you know, so.
Well, it's a scary thought, but just think what would have happened had X-Men tanked.
Oh, the live action?
Yeah, the live action. I mean, just think what would have happened to the comic industry had, you know, those comic movies not caught on. Similarly, it takes one movie tanking for everybody to get up in arms in the animation industry and think, oh no, the fad's over. We got to find something new and different for people to latch onto. No, it's called a bad movie. Just pick up and move on to the next thing.
Yeah, well, but we are going to see a Ghost Rider movie, so I don't know if it's 100% of a good thing.
Oh, boy. Well, hey, look, at least Nicolas Cage isn't playing Superman, okay?
That would have been awful.
That would have been terrible. All right, well, guys, it has been an absolute pleasure. I'm looking at 2 hours and 25 minutes here, so this is the longest showcase spotlight yet, so you guys did a great job. Sean, thank you very much for joining us. You will definitely be back in the future. I'll let you know what's going on with the upcoming showcase spotlights, and it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on this showcase spotlight.
Perfect. Robert, it was great meeting you. I had a lot of fun talking to you. Do you want to know best animated shorts?
Yeah.
I have them. I pulled it up while we were looking.
Okay.
Let's make a prediction here.
Okay. Good.
Well, these are short films. I haven't...
Do they still do the animated category?
I'm looking for it right now.
I'm sure Howl's, the Miyazaki film, Howl's Castle, must be up for best picture.
Probably.
Achievement in art.
They always sort of default.
Best animated feature film of the year.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Howl's Moving Castle, Tim Burton's Corpse Bride, and Wallace and Gromit in Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Wallace and Gromit. That's my choice right there.
Wallace and Gromit, definitely probably the best of those three, but however, I'll say they'll give it to Miyazaki again.
You know, honestly, if they don't give it to Wallace and Gromit is getting the shaft, because I think that out of all the ones that came out this year, it was the most creative, it was the most funny, and it was the most well-produced. And
But the two of the other three films aren't even animated. I mean, how pathetic is that?
I know. It's been a very light year for animated movies, so very, very light year indeed.
Light year in general for movie fans, you know, at all.
I think 3D animation should be a separate category.
It will be someday. Give it another 4 or 5 years and it will be. It definitely will be. And then by then they'll have, you know, 4D animation, so who knows?
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for, nice meeting you, Sean. I apologize that I'm not more caught up with some of the Diniverse stuff. I've been, you know, playing video games more than watching cartoons. So,
well, if anything, I think we got a nice little mix here of backgrounds on where we're coming from with regards to animation. So I really enjoyed our conversation because it was such a nice mix of backgrounds and where we're coming from as far as what we like in animation and what we feel about things. So I think we kind of touched on a lot of different opinions on things, which is great.
Yeah, without a doubt. And Rob, definitely thanks for pinch hitting here. I know that you didn't exactly know you were going to be on today, but you did a great job for filling in.
Yeah, I had to watch my son's Dallas game on mute there. That's just ended. So.
Oh, man. All right. Well, and again, thank you so much to the listeners as well. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it. This was episode, yeah, you guessed it, 25. It's amazing how I've had 25 episodes. I can't believe it's happened, but it has. So thank you guys so much for listening. The email address is speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. That's speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. Make sure to tune in on Thursday for a regular old episode of Geek Speak. I know you've had some specials the past couple of times, but I'll be back to normal on Thursday with episode 26 with all the gaming, gadgets, tech, anime, comics, and more you can imagine. So until then, for Sean, for Robert, I'm Ian Levenstein. Have a great week. Enjoy your geek. Take care, everybody. I'll see you on Thursday.
Adios.
It's time to speak geek with the geeks. Gaming, tech, news, and more here on Geek Speak. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Let's geek out, everybody.